no penalties here. It's the Illegal Curve Hockey Show podcast with Drew Mindell, Ezra Ginsberg, and Dave Manute.
Good morning, Winnipeg. Good morning, Manitoba. For all those joining us live this morning on our YouTube channel and all of our social media platforms, we say good morning, universe, and welcome to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. With Dave Manuk, with Ezra Ginsberg, I am your host, Drew Mindell. We're with you for the next couple of hours talking everything about the Winnipeg Jets. We'll touch on the Stanley Cup Final now that we know it is the unexpected matchup of the Tampa Bay Lightning and the Cinderella Montreal Canadiens. But tons of Jets talk for you on this Saturday morning. We're also going to be joined throughout the show by Dennis Bayak, TSN's voice of the Winnipeg Jets. You know him as the Jets TV broadcaster. And again, also be joined in the second hour by TSN director of scouting, Craig Button, to talk about the upcoming NHL draft. Gentlemen, good to see you on this Saturday morning, the last show in the month of June, the 26th of June. Dave Manuk repping the Detroit Tigers hat, which is impressive, even though they're one of the worst teams in Major League Baseball.
My affiliation for hats, Drew. It doesn't matter what how the team is doing. I just would like
it's a great logo, though.
It is a good logo. It's a solid logo.
A lot of history. Apparently, a great park as well. We were going to try to go to that park.
Comerica.
We were going to try to go to that one after one of the drafts. It didn't quite work out. It's funny though. Right before you came on air, Dave was saying he was going to rock the Dodgers hat. So when we started the show, I was expecting that Dodgers hat. But the Tigers one's a good one too. Makes me think of Eminem.
Comerica, good park. I once on my birthday there, I once saw a guy streaking across the field. And let me tell you, I actually saw the video somewhere, but it was hilarious. And then he was a big boy, but he got taken down by security. Actually, I think it was the most memorable part of both the game.
Is this the
it wasn't
the
you though, right? Just to be clear, it wasn't you.
No, it was not me.
Okay.
Although I was right behind the pitching, you know, where the pitchers pitch. Or warm up, I should say, in Detroit. So the left field bleachers, and we had a pretty good view. We were right first, second row.
Well, speaking of fans gone wild, did you see in the middle of the third period in yesterday's game between the Isles and Game 7? You know, the action on the ice is going on, and meanwhile, as the camera is following the action, you can see that there's a brawl in the crowd. I mean, those people paid a lot of money. Like, usually you don't necessarily see the brawl happen in row 5 of the lower bowl at ice level, but they were throwing lefts and rights as a pretty good brawl that was going on in the middle of a 1-0 game 7. God bless America, I think is what I
and
say
it's,
to that.
It's unbelievable. Phil Esposito and Brian Engblom can really still throw them, right, boys? So it's nice to see that those guys, you know, still have a little fight left in the tank. But I didn't see that, Drew. I was watching the game live, but obviously I missed that. I must have been, going to the fridge for some some snacks or something. I don't know.
Undoubtedly, you're looking to bulk up with some late night rations. It was a great fight. It was entertaining. The game was going on. People were trying to watch the fight at the same time. It was a bit of a gong show, but in any event, the Tampa Bay Lightning win in Game 7. We'll talk about that later on in the program. We start with the big news of the week from the Winnipeg Jets, from the True North perspective, the Manitoba Moose perspective, of course, and that is the shocking announcement earlier this week. This one came out of left field. There was no inkling that this was on the horizon. Pascal Vincent leaving the Manitoba Moose as their head coach, heading to Columbus. The ties between Columbus and Winnipeg continue. Heading to Columbus to be the assistant coach for the Blue Jackets under their new head coach, Brad Larson. This one is a surprise to all of us, no doubt. Dave, you know Pascal the best out of the three of us. This is, to me, the most surprising because previously he'd been on record as saying his next move wasn't going to be back in the NHL as an assistant coach. It was going to be back in the NHL in his hopes as a head coach. So this one's certainly coming out of nowhere.
Yeah, that's a fair point, Drew. And I think Aaron Portsline of The Athletic in Columbus reported that Pascal interviewed for the head coaching position there in Columbus with the Blue Jackets. Obviously, they liked what they saw, not enough to give him the head coaching responsibilities, but to bring him in, I think, as an associate coach for their organization. And look, he's been with the Manitoba Moose for 5 years after leaving, the Jets to take over the role that was vacated by Keith McCambridge. And I think sometimes when you're not in the NHL, you get a little bit forgotten. And you know, there's vacancies that open up periodically, but maybe he saw this as a stepping stone, a more likely stepping stone to a role in the NHL. I mean, look, at the end of the day, you know, Pascal talks about what the AHL is, right? It's about development, but it's not just for players' development. It's for coaches' development. And so I wonder if he felt that he had hit his saturation point for what he had learned as a coach and was ready for that next level of responsibility. Because if you do a good job in Columbus, you know, it was a 3-year deal he signed with the Blue Jackets. If he does a good job on, like, coaches aren't looking at things in short term. They're looking at what their long-term prospects are. So he's thinking to himself, in 3 years, yeah, that's true too. But if he's done a good job with Columbus, with whatever his responsibilities are, and there's some reports that it'll be a power play and mm-hmm. working with that. But if that's the case and he's done a good job, that puts him maybe in a better place to move to that next level of you know, responsibility, which would be as a head coach.
Well, let me stop you right there. And as he, you know, is this a promotion or is this a lateral move? Because, you know, Pascal Vincent's name had been bandied about many times before as a possible NHL head coach. If Dominic Ducharme didn't succeed in Montreal, you know, Pascal Vincent was linked to the Montreal organization, obviously given that he's, you know, he's fluent in French, which is a requirement to be the head coach of the Montreal Canadiens. He was linked to the Habs organization. He was certainly thought of by a lot of people here in Winnipeg as a potential head coach in waiting, you know, if Paul Maurice was to move along at any point in time. You know, whatever it might be, to me, it very much seems not necessarily like a promotion to go to be the assistant coach in Columbus, but at best a lateral move to move from the Moose head coach to the assistant coach.
Yeah.
I find it to be a very, very interesting move, I would say.
Yeah, and unexpected, right? Like we assume, guys, that next season Pascal Vincent would be coaching the Moose, right? I don't think any of us, you know, had heard anything that, you know, Pascal was leaving the Jets organization. So yeah, Drew, I mean, you could look at it as a lateral move just in terms of, you know, he was a head coach in the American Hockey League and now he's an assistant coach, but it's obviously not a lateral move in terms of, you know, going up to the NHL, right? So first off, I just want to say, you know, it's going to, you know, be sad to not see Pascal in the city of Winnipeg and in the Jets organization, because, you know, we had him on the show, you know, 2 or 3 times a year. We've probably had him on the show 20 times, you know, over the last 5 or 6 years. And, you know, obviously, you know, Dave has, you know, developed a personal relationship with Pascal. In addition to being an excellent coach who has a great track record of developing young players, right? Like whether that's a Kyle Connor, a Mason Appleton, Logan Stanley, whoever. I mean, he's just a good human being. Like mm-hmm. I remember talking to him several times, you know, at Bell MTS Place, Canada Life Center is what we have to call it now.
No. Back then you had the name right.
Sure. MTS Center or whatever. I don't even remember what it was anymore. But yeah. Just talking to him, you know, between intermissions at Jets games, that's when I would see him. I know, you know, Dave has talked to him a lot more over the years, but just the nicest guy, always gave you the time of day. You're not going to find anybody that says anything bad about him. Just a very smart hockey mind. And like I said, a good person. At the end of the day, guys, like it's about more than hockey. So, you know, he's going to do an excellent job in Columbus. And in terms of, you know, what Dave said about, you know, him seeing a better opportunity in Columbus. Yeah, that's kind of the way I view it, right? Like, you know, Pascal, who knows, he might eventually become the head coach of the Blue Jackets. But for him, he's got to be thinking like, I'm young. If I do a good job as an assistant with Columbus, I could get an NHL job with another team.
Well, let me stop.
I was just going to say, I don't know if Pascal interviewed with Seattle, but you know, that was a team that I thought, let's be honest, guys, as soon as Rod Brind'Amour re-signed in Carolina, clearly mm-hmm. Francis wanted Brind'Amour in Seattle. I think we all know that they're good friends. And then as soon as, you know, former UND coach Dave Haxtell was hired in Seattle, obviously, you know, there's no more head coach openings, right? So, I mean, I just thought it would be interesting to know if Pascal interviewed with Seattle. But as Dave mentioned, you know, from a report from Aaron Portsline, he interviewed in Columbus. And obviously, you know, Jarmo Kekäläinen and John Davidson, they really liked what they heard from Pascal. And that's why, you know, they offered him the assistant coaching position. But it's obviously a great opportunity, you know, for Pascal and a big loss for the Jets.
Well, something has had to change. because here's a quote from Pascal Vincent when he was speaking with the Winnipeg Free Press last November. So November of 2020, about, what did that be? About 8 months ago or so. Paul, that being Jets head coach Paul Maurice, and I are pretty close and pretty direct with one another. There's no games. So when Todd Woodcroft left, Paul and I had a conversation. Without him saying, him being Paul Maurice, without him saying, I'm offering you the job, he was asking me if I had any interest. I told him probably not, but give me a few days to think about this. And we spoke a few days later, and I told him I'm really happy where I am right now, that being the head coach of the Manitoba Moose. He said, I figured so, but needed to talk to you about it. So clearly what you know Pascal is saying there is that the opportunity to come back to the NHL level with the Jets existed last November. That's the job that eventually went to Dave Lowry. Instead of it, and Pascal, you know, sounds like he said he turned it down and it to stay with the Manitoba Moose. And then for whatever reason, he's decided that he no longer wanted to be the head coach of the Moose, and he wants to be the assistant coach in Columbus. So I do find it very interesting that last November, he wasn't interested in being an assistant coach, but this June, he was interested in being an assistant coach.
Well, the difference, obviously, Drew, is, you know, different organization, right? And sure. That's why it's like, you know, and I'll let Dave get in here because he obviously, you know, knows Pascal really well, and he has much more insight on the Moose, even though I can provide some insight, but you know,
not at that
the
much.
End of the, at, exactly. at the end of the day, you know, I just look at it, you know, like this is a great opportunity for him. And look, I mean, we knew Pascal was not going to be the Moose coach forever, right? So, I mean, yeah, we thought he would be, you know, the Moose coach to start the 21, you know, 22 season, Dave, but you knew it was only a matter of time. He's too good of a hockey coach. He was going to eventually, you know, move on to bigger and greater things. So whether that's, you know, an NHL head coach one day, we'll see. But, you know, obviously, you know, this is just a, you know, great move for him. He gets to be an assistant coach in the NHL again, and, you know, potentially a future head coach. So I agree, Drew, it was a little bit unexpected and maybe a lateral move in some people's eyes. But I think Columbus just saw a really good hockey coach and they think he can really help their team.
There's no question, Dave, that Pascal Vincent will help the Columbus Blue Jackets. He'll help any team that he's behind the bench of. I mean, you know, we're biased, admittedly, but, you know, he's done a great job, you know, with the Manitoba Moose. Sometimes with the Manitoba Moose, Dave, as you know better than anybody in the city, were very lean in terms of the talent that they were really putting out on the ice. There were, you know, his record, I don't think, accurately reflects just how good of a job he did with the Manitoba Moose. His record, you know, as the Moose head coach, 155, 139, and 31. Looking at those numbers, it doesn't jump out at you as anything that's overwhelming. But Dave, you know as well as anybody, more than you know, better than anyone, that there were some times where he squeezed every last drop of juice out of a Manitoba Moose team that didn't really have, you know, that much citrus in their players.
Yeah,
to torture an analogy.
Yeah, but I think it's fair. I think
that, I feel like an orange.
Yeah,
like you haven't had an orange in your entire life.
Hey, just walk over to the kitchen. You can grab an orange.
That's not true. I love mandarins.
So. No, it's interesting, Drew. And someone I had tweeted on I tweeted yesterday or the day before saying it's a big loss for the organization. And someone said, you know, how would you quantify it being a big loss? Because, you know, his record is what you just stated, which is still obviously okay, but it's, you know, it's not jumping off out at you. And I said, because organizationally, you don't look at him based on that metric of wins and losses. You're looking at him as to what he's done with the list of prospects he's been given. And it's not just him, and he'll be the first to admit, like, Eric Dubois has done a very good job with the defensive prospects. Marty Johnston has done a very good job with the forward prospects. So it's not just Pascal alone who's been responsible for development. You know, guys like Mike Keane, Jimmy Roy, those guys are huge in terms of the development for the Manitoba Moose. So you're not going to give Pascal Vincent, and Pascal Vincent himself wouldn't take sole responsibility for what the prospects have done under his kind of eyes. But you also, it's unmistakable, right? And you know, looking at the record specifically, in 2017-18, they had the best team in the AHL, and it wasn't even close. But then Mark Scheifele gets injured. Jack Roslovic, who's the best center, probably the best player in the AHL, from what I saw, gets called up to the Jets. Then they lose Michael Hutchinson, who was playing, like, unbelievable. Like, that November, they were untouchable. And then it's the reality of life in the AHL is, roster volatility, and you don't have consistency in your roster oftentimes because you're kind of a slave to what the parent club is doing. And if the Jets have injuries, then you tend to lose your best players because that's what the AHL is generally doing, unless they're prospects like, you know, for example, Cole Perfetti, who you're going to leave in the AHL because you want him to develop under, you don't want him in the NHL yet at that, you know, from the Jets perspective. Mm-hmm. So to me, you know, you don't judge him based on the wins and the losses because, to your point, rosters are just too volatile in the AHL. But you look at what he's been able to do in terms of prospect development, and that to me is unmistakable, right? Kyle Connor goes down to the AHL and, you know, eventually goes up. Jack Roslovic, look what he was able to do, like I said. And again, all of this is based on what the players are.
Sure.
But he's been able to help guys along and get to that next level. And I think it's just, to your point, Drew, it's just the manner in which he speaks with people, the honesty. I mean, guys, we've had him on, to Ezzie's point, so many times. And he doesn't sugarcoat. He'll never throw someone under the bus. He never says that player stinks or that player did this. But he's also very forthright and honest in his assessments. You know, when we had him on in March for one of our shows, and he was talking about the things like a prospect like David Gustafson, like 2018 second rounder for the Jets, can do to get better, to get to that next level. And he's not tearing the player down. He's just telling you this matter of fact, this is what the guy needs to do. That's that level of honesty and forthright element that Pascal Vincent possesses that I think is going to serve him well in the NHL role.
It's a difficult needle to thread, to your point, Dave, about being honest with the player.
Can you sew, Drew? Do you do any sewing?
I can't. I cannot do any sewing. But you know, being honest with a player, being honest with that player in the media when asked a direct question, to your point, he was always honest with us. But at the same time, not offending anybody. It's almost like it's not an easy skill set to learn, you know, because a lot of, you know, players could potentially get upset if the comments are misconstrued or if they're taken to be too critical. But the way Pascal was able to deliver those messages, and we don't know necessarily what he did in private, but you have a pretty good idea that what he said publicly and what he said privately usually matched up. And as a result, players were able to take the any critiques not as personal insults, but as both parties being aware that he's only striving to get players better, that his comments are designed to improve a player and better their chances and improve their trajectory to the next level of their development. That's a difficult needle to thread sometimes. And he seems like more often than not, he was able to succeed in doing that with the Manitoba Moose. It's a big loss. I mean, it really, for an organization that, and this is just, you know, we hear it ad nauseum, is draft and develop. Obviously, when Keith McCambridge was dismissed as head coach of the Manitoba Moose, or I guess the Ice Caps,
he was here for the first year.
Did he spend a year here? Okay, you know, when he was dismissed, obviously the organization didn't feel that.
I don't think he was dismissed. I'd have to look back. I think he was. I just don't think they renewed his contract.
Okay, well, when he was no longer the head coach, you know, obviously they didn't feel that the development was happening in a manner that they needed it to. Pascal has stepped in and sort of seamlessly been able to continue that development. I mean, you know, I'm sure that if you ask Logan Stanley, I mean, Logan Stanley, I'm sure, would credit Pascal Vincent with a lot of his development from a guy who certainly seemed like he wasn't necessarily going to reach his standing as a first round pick. You know, Pascal Vincent and the rest of the coaching staff and the Moose obviously played a big role in helping so many of the players that you currently see, either on the Winnipeg Jets roster or trying to break through into the Winnipeg Jets roster. It's a big loss for the organization, and I'm not certain how or who they're going to fill that position with. I think that's the big unknown, is the next coach of the Manitoba Moose in the organization right now, or are they going to look outside the organization for that position? I mean, it's you know, certainly throws a wrinkle, I think, in the Jets offseason, Ezzie.
Yeah, there's no doubt that he's going to be tough to replace, but you know, I imagine there will be, you know, a lot of people interested in that job, right? Sure. And you know, you hear a lot of the coaches that are, you know, candidates for NHL head coaching positions. You know, you can easily kind of, you know, connect the dots. You know, like a guy like Scott Sandelin, who obviously, you know, is the head coach of the University of Minnesota Duluth. There's the Duluth connection there. I'm not saying that, you know, True North is going to hire Scott Sandelin, but I'm saying I wouldn't be surprised if you see a coach from the college ranks make the jump to the AHL, because we know that if you look throughout the NHL, you know, the vast majority of NHL head coaches were head coaches in the American Hockey League, right? You know, we could put together a laundry list of NHL head coaches who got their, you know, start in the AHL. So I think, you know, that list is going to be a long one. And it's possible that, you know, Kevin Cheveldayoff and Craig Heisinger, that, you know, they have, you know, one or two guys at the top of the list. That wouldn't surprise me at all. And it could be, you know, maybe, you know, Eric Dubois does get that promotion, but I do think it's going to be a very attractive job, because you just look at, you know, all the good young players, you know, that the Jets have drafted, that have come through the Moose system. So I think that, you know, it's going to be appealing for a lot of coaches that want to make that jump to the pro level, or maybe that are looking for, you know, another job at the pro level. So yeah, I mean, you're never going to replace Pascal. He's a very unique coach and excellent coach, but you know, I do think that, you know, the Jets will replace him with somebody who's very capable and who's probably going to do a really good job. But yeah, right now, I don't think there's anybody that necessarily has, you know, the inside track that I'm aware of. I think there's going to be a lot of speculation. You're going to hear some, you know, familiar names and everything like that. Yeah, I mean, there's just no doubt about it that it's going to be a big loss. But again, good for Pascal. I mean, right? Like that's how this business works, right? You move on when you have an opportunity, and it is a great opportunity for him.
Dave, I mean, you obviously know the Moose better than anybody in the city. Would you think that they'd look internally as their first sort of look for that, for the replacement of Pascal Vincent? Or do you think that this is going to be somebody that comes in from the outside of the organization, knowing what you know about Eric Dubois, knowing what you know about Marty Johnston, you know, knowing what you know about the Moose organization? Is this going to be, you know, obviously, you know, I'm asking you to prognosticate here, but would you suspect that this is going to be an internal promotion, or do you think it's going to be somebody coming from the outside?
It's a good question, Drew. I haven't, it's funny, I haven't yet turned my focus to who will be Pascal's replacement, because of course we're still so focused on the fact that he's leaving the organization. So I would imagine that they'll obviously get opportunity. If Eric Dubois and Marty Johnston want that role, they'll for sure have an opportunity to apply for it. And you know, I'm sure that Pascal Vincent is going to say nothing but good things about what they've been able to do, like I said, for the organization and for the players. And I know how much the players like these guys. Like, that's the one thing that's always conveyed to me from the players, is their appreciation for what those guys bring. So, and you can look at the crop of defensemen that have come through the organization and have, you know, blossomed under Eric Dubois and then gone on to the Winnipeg Jets. It's a long list, right? And there's a really good crop. I don't need to go over it right now, but there's a really good crop of young prospect defensemen that Eric Dubois is working with. So certainly I think if they would want that opportunity, they can apply for it. I don't know. I just, you know, it's one thing. It's an interesting thing about assistant coaches. You don't generally talk to them. Like, I see them around the rink. I know them. They know me, but sure. I don't have a general sense, because I don't talk to those guys on a regular basis the way I would obviously with Pascal Vincent. So
assistant coaches are often like kids, seen but not heard.
Yeah, no, it's true. And so it's a function of, like I said, I don't know what their ambitions are and whether that is something that's within their purview. But I certainly think that they'll get a shot. And if not, then yeah, like as he says, I could see a guy, you know, from college or a junior coach. Like in my head, I was like, okay, well, so how does this going to work? They're going to hire Dave Manson and somehow they're going to trade for Josh Manson. That's definitely the way this is playing out. But I don't know. I mean, like I said, I haven't really turned my focus. I haven't started bugging anybody in the organization to get a sense as to what is happening with the head coaching position, just simply because it's so fresh with Pascal just being announced a couple of days ago.
Right. And another guy that I've, you know, heard out there is Nolan Baumgartner, for his obvious connections, former captain of the Moose. He's an assistant with Vancouver, longtime assistant with Utica in the American Hockey League. But again, you know, he might be happy in Vancouver. So there's a lot of names like Scott Arneil for the obvious connections. But again, you know, do these guys want to go from an assistant coach in the NHL to a head coach in the American Hockey League? I have no idea. But I do think, you know, there's a good chance that it's going to be, you know, somebody that maybe isn't as familiar to the Jets, right, Drew? So, you know, we mentioned a guy like Scott Sandelin, right? Like, you know, I think he wants to be an NHL head coach, but maybe he, you know, would like to start in the American Hockey League. And then you hear another guy that, you know, has been, you know, rumored to be a future NHL head coach is Lane Lambert, who's been a longtime assistant coach with Barry Trotz. But again, does Lane Lambert want to wait to become an NHL head coach, or would he look at Manitoba and he'd say, you know, I'd like to be a head coach in the American Hockey League. That's my best route. So again, we're throwing out a lot of names, but the reality is, Drew, Dave might be the Moose insider. Dave doesn't know right now. This is too new to know who, you know, you can't throw out an exact name. You can only throw out potential names that make sense. That's why I mentioned Nolan Baumgartner.
The track record U.S. college head coaches jumping from U.S. college to the NHL and succeeding is not great. You think about Dave Hakstol. I mean, he went from UND to Philadelphia. He didn't last long in Philly. Now, obviously, he's getting
they made the playoffs the first year.
And more importantly, it's a lot of revisionist history because Philadelphia wasn't a team that was expected to do anything, and he did a pretty good job. I think I was talking to someone who said that I think they looked and the predictions were Philadelphia was – everybody predicted Philly to miss the playoffs that first year, and he helped them. So, I mean, it's always a little bit.
But then after that, they reverted backwards, and that's
why.
No,
Drew. I mean, you're right. I mean,
David Quinn in New York.
Yeah. No, exactly. That's the one that I was going to say didn't quite work out, and that's why Gerard Gallant was hired, right? So, yeah. I mean, yeah, you're right. I mean, it's much more common. Again, going back to what we said before, I know Dennis is coming up in a few minutes here, but you know, the list of coaches that have graduated from the American Hockey League to the NHL is much longer than the list of coaches that have graduated from NCAA to the NHL.
It certainly will be an interesting decision that True North is going to have to now come up with. I'm not sure that they necessarily expected this is going to be on their horizon this offseason, but you never know what wrinkles the offseason is going to bring, and this is certainly counts as one of them. Let's take a quick break. When we come back, Dennis Bayak, voice of the Winnipeg Jets, is going to join us on the show. More Jets talk. Nice to see so many of you joining us in the chat on this Saturday morning. While you're here, if you haven't done so yet, smash the like button. If you haven't already subscribe to our YouTube channel, please do that as well. More Jets talk with Dennis Bayak coming up next. You're listening, you're watching, you're chatting with the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on YouTube and all of our social media platforms. It's Saturday morning. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on YouTube and all of our social media platforms. I'm not sure what that noise is. Dave, are you okay there? I think you were tripping up the stairs a little bit there, buddy. Dave and Ezzy showing off the professionalism that everyone has known and loved them for.
I think Dave was just that excited that Dennis was on.
We're pleased to welcome to the program, joining us from his palatial palace, Mr. Dennis Bayak, Winnipeg Jets broadcaster. Dennis, nice to see you, buddy. Good morning.
Gentlemen, it is good to be with you. How are you guys?
We're doing fine and dandy. Dennis, obviously great to be with you. Great to see you as well. Nice to see that you're back from Latvia. Did I hear correctly that you're now a member of Latvian royalty? Is that what the honor was bestowed upon you after the World Hockey Championships?
Well, actually, we did have letters from the Latvian embassy that we were welcome in Latvia for the World Championships. So I'm big in Denmark now because I called their first ever World Junior Championship back in Toronto days years ago, and now I have some official documentation from Latvia, so we'll see what happens down the road. Maybe I'll end up there. You never know. I doubt it, though.
Dennis obviously brought you on to talk about the Jets and their offseason.
Dave, nice entrance, by the way.
Thank you, Dennis. Appreciate that.
It's an ongoing. When we go to break, Dave and Ezzy have to have their 2 minutes of quality time together, and it's an ongoing joke that Dave can never make it back on the screen in time to not look like Chris Farley falling through the table on Saturday Night Live. But that's neither here nor there. You know, Dennis, obviously we're going to talk about the Jets with you, and we'll get into that quickly. But I guess the big news of the week of the loss of Pascal Vincent to the Columbus Blue Jackets organization. You know, we're not going to go deep into the Moose with you here, but just, you know, your thoughts on your experience with Pascal Vincent over the last, you know, at least more than a half decade, certainly.
Well, certainly it was a pleasure to be around. Just a terrific gentleman. We actually lived in the same building for a while in Winnipeg, so we spent some time together. Good for him. You know what? He did a real good job with the Winnipeg Jets, went on to the Manitoba Moose and did a terrific job there. And now gets the opportunity to get back in the National Hockey League with the Columbus Blue Jackets with a young head coach. I think that's the key to that move for Pascal Vincent. He's going in with a rookie head coach in the National Hockey League, and his experience will be relied on a lot. So good for him. Congratulations, and hopefully he'll enjoy Columbus.
Dennis, we want to get into the Stanley Cup final with you, obviously, and talk about those Montreal Canadiens in addition to the Tampa Bay Lightning. But we obviously want to, you know, talk for the most part about, you know, the Jets here. And, you know, you've been covering this team since they came over from Atlanta. You're very familiar, you know, with the organization. How would you say, you know, this particular offseason is different? Because there was an obvious letdown in the second round versus the Montreal Canadiens. But would you say that, you know, this is going to be a much different offseason, not just in terms of what, you know, Kevin Cheveldayoff and the management group has to address, but just in terms of, you know, where this team is at, and maybe, you know, there being a little bit more urgency, you know, to go a little bit further in the playoffs in the 21-22 season?
Yeah, I think it's more specific as to what they need. I think as you grow as an organization, you go from just looking at who's out there that can help your hockey club, and that's maybe a wider stable than what they're looking at now. I think they have a real good idea right now of what they need to get to that next level, and that's going to be the challenge for them, is that player or players out there, and what's it going to take to get them into a Winnipeg Jets jersey and into the organization. So those are the challenges in a bit of a shorter summer. Add to that dealing with the expansion draft that's coming up for the Seattle Kraken, almost said Seattle Thunderbirds, and you know, and it's going to be a busy summer. But I think that's probably the difference. I think they can zero in on more of what they need than a general view of, okay, how do we improve this hockey club? I don't think there's a lot of holes on this team. They know what the areas of concern are, and that's going to be the challenge.
You know, Dennis, a player who had just a phenomenal opportunity in just a bizarre year was Cole Perfetti. And we saw everything he did from the World Juniors to the AHL, ultimately in the World Championships, and that opportunity, the growth he got. But next year, such an, you know, because he's not able to play in the AHL, it's an NHL or OHL situation for him. Do you think it's, I mean, I guess it's a two-parter. One, how likely is it, do you think, that we see him in the NHL full-time next year? And do you think there's time for an exemption rule? Because I know how desperate the OHL is to have guys like this, but it's almost like an unfair situation for a player like Cole Perfetti, who was able to do what he was able to do with men, to have to go back to the OHL if unable to make the NHL.
Yeah, I spent too many years in junior to think that another year in junior hockey is ever going to hurt you. But I know where you're coming from, and I understand that. He did make strides this year, there's no doubt. I mean, years ago, there was an exemption, but the payday to a junior team was enormous back then. But that's when you were dealing with buildings that sat 2,500, 4,000 people. So the money you got from the National Hockey League was huge. The money that junior operators can make now, because they're dealing with 5,000 and 6,000 and 7,000 seat buildings, in some cases bigger than that, that player is key for you from a financial standpoint, from a marketing standpoint, and from a simply win standpoint. So, you know, it's been a topsy-turvy year in all leagues, including the CHL. I know the Western Hockey League is going to a different schedule next year. But back to Cole Perfetti, he made strides with the Manitoba Moose this year. So he took advantage of that situation. I think if you talk to Pascal Vincent, other people, and you follow the Moose more than anyone, Dave, so you have a better handle on this than anybody. From the start of the year to the end of the year, he learned how to play with men. Mm-hmm. I think that was the biggest difference. At the World Championship, I was on the other pool, so I didn't see him play live. But we did drive back with Gordon Miller and Mike Johnson to and from the rink to the hotel every day, and they saw him play every game. So they thought he certainly made some strides. I know MJ made the comment once, like to see him shoot the puck a little bit more. But that was a learning experience for him, and I think he took advantage of it and made himself as best as he can ready for the National Hockey League next year. I think some of that's going to depend on what happens with Pierre-Luc Dubois, where he ends up. If he ends up on the wing, then I think there's going to be a spot at center for him to take a serious run at. If Pierre-Luc Dubois ends up back in the middle, then that challenge becomes a little more of a bigger hill for him to climb. But he certainly did make some strides this year.
Dennis Bayak, our guest on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. You're listening, you're watching, you're chatting on our YouTube channel and all of our social media platforms. You know, Dennis, I guess I'll piggyback off that last answer. You mentioned Pierre-Luc Dubois. Obviously, his, you know, abbreviated first year in Winnipeg did not turn out like he wanted. You know, from your perspective, is he a centerman or is he a winger? Because I think that sort of inconsistency may have impacted his playing this past season. And without Paul Stastny, if he doesn't re-sign with the Jets, it seems like you almost need to have Dubois as a center more than a winger.
I like him at center. I think if you can have Mark Scheifele, Pierre-Luc Dubois, Adam Lowry as your top three centers, I think you're in a pretty good situation down the middle. I think that's where he's more comfortable at. He's played wing, yes. But I think the Winnipeg Jets see him. If the lawnmower outside gets too loud, just let me know. I'll shut the door.
you're fine so far.
I think the Winnipeg Jets see him as a centerman. And I think that's where he has to come to camp. And that has to be his mindset coming in, is that I've got that number two spot behind Mark Scheifele on my schedule, and that's what I have to train for. That's what I have to prepare for. So I think big centermen are hard to find, especially skilled. And I know you could look at his stats this year and say maybe he's not as skilled as they thought he was. I just think if you go back over his other years in the National Hockey League and his years coming out of junior and that, the stats are there to prove that this guy can play. And he had a tough go in Winnipeg, there's no doubt. And maybe that did play a part of it. But I think there'll be plenty of conversations, and already has, between Paul Maurice and Pierre-Luc Dubois as to giving him the best opportunity to be the best player he can be for the Winnipeg Jets next year.
Yeah, absolutely. And you know, I asked you about the Jets offseason, you know, and I agree, you know, Dennis, with the expansion draft coming up, the NHL draft, it's obviously going to be, you know, very busy. But I kind of wanted to tie in the Stanley Cup final, the Montreal Canadiens again, because obviously, you know, there are some similarities between these two teams in that, you know, Marc Bergevin clearly, you know, saw a team that was, you know, several players away, but he knew that he could address it in the offseason. So, you know, I know you hear a lot about, you know, what other NHL teams, what the lessons they can learn from the Montreal Canadiens run. But just looking at, you know, the totality of the moves, right? Like whether it's bringing in, you know, a Joel Edmondson from Brandon, or whether it's bringing in, you know, a Corey Perry or a Tyler Toffoli. Do you think, you know, Kevin Cheveldayoff is looking at what Marc Bergevin did, and he's saying that, you know, not only could I bring in maybe a defenseman, but, you know, maybe I can bring in a Corey Perry type of player or a Joel Edmondson type of player, bring in maybe a little bit more of that kind of veteran experience. Like, is that kind of what you see, you know, the Montreal Canadiens run, that the lesson that maybe the Jets are learning from that run?
Well, it'll be interesting to see what the Winnipeg Jets do with that fourth line, whether Nate Thompson right. comes back, whether Trevor Lewis comes back, because that was kind of the idea there. I do think coaches and Luke Richardson is going through it right now with Dom Ducharme out. I think coaches do like a line like the Winnipeg Jets had on that fourth line, and like the Montreal Canadiens have right now with Eric Staal and Joel Armia and with Corey Perry. So what is interesting is that Corey Perry was supposed to be an on-and-off player, wasn't supposed to be a regular player for the Montreal Canadiens, but I think we're seeing his DNA that we've seen over the years in the National Hockey League come to the core here, and he's been a very, very impactful player for the Montreal Canadiens. So, yeah, there's lessons to be learned. Marc Bergevin went out and realized they needed some size on the back end and went out and got Joel Edmondson, a steady defenseman who isn't flashy by any stretch of the imagination, had a Stanley Cup under his belt, solid defenseman, solid individual, and added him to that top four for the Montreal Canadiens, and that's turned out very well. So that's back to what we were talking about. You guys have talked about this, is being specific in what you need. Target what you need and try and go out and get it. Targeting what you need and going out and getting it are two totally different things here. But, you know, Marc Bergevin, again, took a lot of heat this year. Carey Price took a lot of heat. What's interesting is the Vegas Golden Knights trade Nick Suzuki for Max Pacioretty, and yet Suzuki was a more impactful player in this series than what Pacioretty was in that last series. So now you take it even further. Sergachev for Tampa, Jonathan Drouin not in the lineup for the Montreal Canadiens. So there's lots of sidebar stories to go along with what's coming up here for the Stanley Cup final. But I mean, we saw the elation from Marc Bergevin when I had a couple of non-hockey fans kind of say to me yesterday, who was that guy in the burgundy suit? And he certainly was happy with the fact that Canadians are getting to the Stanley Cup final.
Dennis Bayak, our guest on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show, Saturday morning, where you're watching, you're chatting, you're tuning into our YouTube channel and all of our social media platforms.
You know, Dennis, we're less than a month away from the expansion draft, and I think it's going to be fascinating because, you know, the Vegas one isn't that far in the past that we can look to that as an example. Not necessarily Jets specific, but obviously it's going to have a big impact on the Jets because we don't know what they're going to do, what Kevin Cheveldayoff and his group are going to do in terms of trying to protect a guy like Logan Stanley, who they put so much time and effort in. They saw the fruits of their labor with him, but he could be a player that is, you know, a loser, Mason Appleton. But do you think teams are going to be as inclined to trade to do what they were doing with Vegas this time around with Seattle?
Well, they'll try. And then that's going to be the challenge for Ron Francis is to try and accomplish, you know, what George McPhee did and Kelly McCrimmon did with the Vegas Golden Knights. Are we going to be able to get an Alex Tuck out of Minnesota? Or our general manager is going to be a little bit leery about making those kind of deals simply because of what happened with the Vegas Golden Knights. But I still think general managers are going to do what they think is best for their hockey club. And then it's going to be up to Ron Francis and his staff to decide, is this good for us or is this not good for us? I still think there's going to be some players next year where we're going to look at it, and whether it's a William Karlsson type player, whether it's an Alex Tuck type player, we're going to look at that Seattle roster and say, why did Team X let that player go? But every team has needs and wants, and they make moves to try and fit what's best for their team. So I still think you're going to have some surprises, and you're going to have some of that simply because you're going to have players who maybe weren't given an opportunity in the organization that they're with. They're going to get the opportunity to be to get more minutes, be higher up in the lineup, and they're going to take advantage of that. And just a guy like William Karlsson is the guy that comes to mind.
You know, Dennis, I look at the Jets offseason, and, you know, it's certainly going to be a busy offseason, but I don't think it's quite as busy as some of the recent offseasons that the team has had. You look at the two big RFAs, and that's right. Neil Pionk and Andrew Kopp. You know, Andrew Kopp, you know, obviously we know who he's represented by, Kurt Overhart, you know, certainly a hard-driving agent, to say the least. They've been to arbitration before, both sides. He is arbitration eligible again. What do you see happening with Andrew Kopp and his long-term future here in Winnipeg? You know, 1 year away from UFA status, so the Jets obviously don't want to, you know, walk him into UFA status after this year. But do you think that they're going to be able to get him under contract for a longer-term deal than that?
Well, that's going to be the challenge. I mean, the players' camp is going to push for either if you want to protect yourself against this player going to the market as an unrestricted free agent, then show me the money. And the team is going to come back and try and limit that. They want to try and limit the dollars, as they always do, and rightfully so, because you've got a cap to deal with. It's not going up. But you also have a player that's an interesting individual. You've got a player that plays 5-on-5, kills penalties, plays the power play, good in the room, bit of a leader, good on faceoffs. Andrew Kopp has lots going for him. So now it's going to be to try and find that balance between dollar value, term, unrestricted free agency around the corner. The interesting part comes is if the Winnipeg Jets can't get Andrew Kopp signed to a deal prior to the expansion draft, do they trade him? Do they make a deal to kind of get something back? You don't want to lose Andrew Kopp to unrestricted free agency and then lose another player. You're not going to protect Andrew Kopp because you don't have him signed, and lose Mason Appleton and then find out that you can't sign Andrew Kopp. You don't want to lose two players out of this. So that's the challenge going forward, and both sides know there's a deadline. I think Andrew Kopp likes his situation in Winnipeg, plays up the lineup every now and then. So it's going to come down to a dollar value, and you hear numbers all over the board, and there's going to be comparisons out there to other players. From a Jets standpoint, if you can get Andrew Kopp to at least a 3-year deal, maybe a 4. That balances out a little bit better. Is there going to be a 4 in front of his per annum paycheck? Probably. And so now it's trying to find out where everything fits. But going into it, I think they'll get Neil Pionk done. I think that's going to be maybe easier to get done than Andrew Kopp. But then you've got back to what Dave said. What do you do with Logan Stanley? Who do you protect on that back end going into that expansion draft with Seattle? So those are the challenges. And you're right. There maybe isn't as many players for Kevin Cheveldayoff to sign. But for him and Larry, I think there's going to be a lot of hours spent on trying to get Andrew Copp under contract.
Dennis, before I ask you my next question, I just have to say I love the birds chirping in the background there with you in Kelowna. And you know, that combined with, you know, the waves crashing on Dave's TV behind him, it's, you know, creating a very tranquil atmosphere here on the Illegal Curve Show, as opposed to the usual chaos that we're used to. But, you know, I wanted to ask you about your experience in Riga. And you know, I have to say for everybody listening, I felt bad because in late May, as you know, I texted you to come on Illegal Curve to talk about, you know, the Jets-Oilers sweep. And then I get a text back from Dennis saying, Ezra, I'm in Latvia right now. You're going to have to try to get somebody else. So I felt bad. I texted Dave after. Yeah. How did I forget that? But, you know, yeah. Specifically, Dennis, I wanted to ask you, obviously, you've traveled around the world covering, you know, the World Hockey Championships and the World Juniors. And I just wanted to ask you about this year's tournament, because obviously, you know, Canada loses those early games and then, you know, comes back and wins the gold medal. So what was, you know, this year's experience like for you, and particularly, you know, calling the games and then just watching, you know, Canada win the gold when it looked like they might not even, you know, make it to the medal round?
If you're wondering about the birds, it's 10 to 8 here, so they're just kind of getting up this morning as well. It was, you know what, it was a different tournament, and you're right. I mean, this coffee cup is the one from Moscow a number of years ago. So we didn't do as much socializing this year for a number of reasons. Number one, there wasn't very much open when we first got to Riga. It was much like Winnipeg. Restaurants were closed, patios were open, but the weather wasn't conducive to spending time on the patio. It was chilly, it was rainy. And then once the tournament gets going, there really just isn't a lot of time. It's Groundhog Day. Once the tournament gets going, we do 28 games in the first 12 days. So opening weekend, you do 8 games in 3 days. You got 2 on the Friday, 3 on the Saturday, 3 on the Sunday. So, but there's a positive to that, is after that opening weekend, you've now seen every team twice. And then the job becomes a little bit easier. Then you can kind of get a little more specific into who's doing what and some of the background information. With the, I'll be honest, the first weekend, all you're really doing is trying to identify a number to a name. And there were challenges. There was, because there was no tournament last year, so you're 2 years removed from seeing some of these players and some of these teams. With the NHL season running late, there were some players that normally wouldn't be at the World Championship, but they were there. Some of the other teams, like Norway and Denmark, those teams don't change much. Finland was pretty much a totally different team. I'll get to the Canada situation in a second here. And then as it got going, the weather got better, but we come back to a dark hotel. Normally we would come back and on every second night, maybe every third night, you'd have a beer or two, and then you go back up to your room, do a little more work, and get ready for the next day. We didn't have any of that. We came back to a dark hotel. The bar in the lobby bar was closed. The restaurant was closed. So there was really none of that. You know, so you spent a lot of time in your room. But there was also teams were allowed to carry extra players, 3 extra players. So if you got 8 teams to get ready for, which we had on our side, that's really preparing for another team. So that took a little bit extra time. And then there was more movement in and out than we normally see because of the lateness of the NHL and everything else. Canada was a real good story. I mean, there's, you know, you talk about what Gerard Gallant did with Vegas, pulling that team together. And yeah, there were some outside things that happened that weren't very, you know, pleasant in Vegas to start there that I think did help draw that team together in year one. But I think Gerard Gallant did a real good job. And I think that was some of his challenge here, was to pull that Canada team together as quickly as possible. And then, of course, along comes Andrew Mangiapane. And he immediately becomes the scoring guy that they needed, that they were lacking, that one offensive star. And in that tournament, one offensive player can do a lot of damage for you, can be a big benefit for you. And I think we see that, whether it be a Sven Andraghetto that spent some time in the National Hockey League, or a player like that. It just takes that one guy sometimes. And then they got on that run. And what's crazy is some of the things that they needed to have happen that didn't involve them. They needed another game that needed to go to overtime. It didn't matter who won the game, but they needed that game to go to overtime, and it went to overtime. So they had some things go for them from that standpoint. Then they caught fire, and away they went, and good on them. They came together as a team, and you guys have been around sports long enough to know that sometimes you catch that spark and you get on that wave that Dave has in behind him there. And you ride that wave to the bitter end, and it took them right to the gold medal.
Dennis Bayak, our guest on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on YouTube and all of our social media channels.
You know, Dennis, one of the things that people always are clamoring for is the youth. And I'm a guy who, to your point about the AHL, I think it's always a good place to for guys to develop. You can make a mistake. And when Pascal Vincent was the head coach, he didn't staple you to the bench unless it was very egregious. He would, you know, pull you aside, say, this is a teachable moment. And then he'd put you right back up for that next shift. And I can think of a play Dylan Sandberg made where he made a pinch along the wall. And how many people in Winnipeg actually saw it, right? Not many, Dennis. But the reality is he did that. It led to a goal. You know, Johnny Kovacevic had to defend a 2-on-1, and it ends up in the back of the Moose net. That's fine because it's a development league, and you learn from that mistake, and it's not the end of the world. At the NHL level, it's a lot different. The microscope, as you know, is a lot more focused. But having said that, there's certain players who I think are ready for that jump. So from a – you talked about that idea of a veteran fourth line, but what do you do with a player like a David Gustafson who really has done everything that you've asked him to do at that AHL level? He's played the top-line center role. He's penalty-killed. He's power-played. So how do you find a spot for – I mean, obviously, he's got to earn that spot. That's his responsibility in training camp. But do you think that the Jets would be prepared, if he is able to do that, have a good offseason, to give him that responsibility of that fourth-line center role?
I think so, and I say that on the basis that as the trade deadline draws near, I think you can always find a veteran player that a team is looking to move. So you might be able to, if you wanted to add some experience at that point, you might be able to add a veteran there. But I'm with you 100%. I think there comes a time when these young players have to be given the opportunity to advance in your organization. And I think David Gustafson is at that spot right now. He's had some world championship experience. He's played the American Hockey League now. He's got some NHL games under his belt. And this is a big off season for him. He needs to come to camp and convince Paul Maurice that I am good enough to play in that fourth line center spot. The advantage he has is he's very good defensively. It's not like you're trying to take a Cole Perfetti, who's a very good offensive player, and put him into a fourth-line center spot. Right. David Gustafson knows that role because that's the role that he's played. He's not going to get you 50 goals in a year, but he's going to contribute good on faceoffs, and that's what you want, good on penalty kill. And that's going to be – that might be the area that makes or breaks it for David Gustafson. Can he be a penalty killer for Paul Maurice? And if he can keep his faceoff numbers where they need to be, it's the little things that will get him there. They know, we all know as we watch him develop and watch him play what he can do big picture. It's the little things. Can he be a penalty killer? Can he win those key faceoffs in his own end of the ice? But I'm with you. I think some of those young players need to be given the opportunity at training camp to show. It was a different training camp. It was different last year. There was no preseason games, and that probably hurt some players. They didn't get the opportunity to show what they can do. But I think that has to happen come this year's training camp with a lot of those young guys.
Last question for you, Dennis. Tampa Bay or Montreal? Can Cinderella keep it going?
Well, Tampa Bay is a very good team. First off, it was just, you know what, we did so many games from old veterans, Nassau Veterans Memorial Coliseum on Long Island there. It was great to see the atmosphere in that building. And, you know, it was a good run for the New York Islanders. But Tampa Bay is a very good team. But what the Montreal Canadiens have accomplished is special. And, you know, to be down 3-1 to the Toronto Maple Leafs. And I wonder if that didn't play a part in what happened with the Winnipeg Jets. I wonder if the Winnipeg Jets spent so much time preparing for the Toronto Maple Leafs, and then all of a sudden in 48 hours you had to change and prepare for the Montreal Canadiens. So, but give the Canadiens credit, the entire coaching staff, because they're without Dom Ducharme right now. But they got the big four on the back end. Petrie did miss some games. It's tough to get inside on them. You've got Carey Price. And I think this is going to be a challenge. I do think if the wild card is going to be Nikita Kucherov. How hurt is he? Is he going to be in game one? against the Montreal Canadiens. If Nikita Kucherov is playing at 65%, then I think that really helps Montreal's chances. If Nikita Kucherov is playing at 85 or 90%, then I think between him and Braden Point, I think the Canadiens are going to have a challenge defensively, especially with Tampa having home ice advantage in that. But anytime you have Carey Price, I think it's very difficult to bet. Again, you know, him getting hurt down the stretch was probably the best thing that happened to the Montreal Canadiens. Shea Weber getting hurt down the stretch was probably the best thing that happened to the Montreal Canadiens. So you wonder if there isn't something magic around this team right now, and you have to get on those rolls. Bottom line, I'm still going to stick with Tampa. I think they're four lines deep, and if they can stay healthy and if Nikita Kucherov is at 85 or higher percent health-wise, I can see the Tampa Bay Lightning repeat. But I think every hockey fan, and that's what we are now, we're hockey fans, I think you really appreciate what the Montreal Canadiens are doing, and somewhere deep inside, you have to pull for them because of what they went through this past year, coaching change and everything else around that team. And it's a good team. It shows the, you know, and you know what, Kenny Holland referred to the Winnipeg Jets when he talked about that after the Jets swept the Oilers, this team concept. And I think that's what we're seeing with the Montreal Canadiens too. So I think it's going to be a very good series. It's great out here. You almost hope for overtime when you're out here because the game started at 5 o'clock. So you don't mind the overtime at all. It can go 3-4 overtime periods and you're still getting to bed at a decent time as long as the beer doesn't run out. I'm expecting a good series, but I think Tampa, as long as they can stay healthy, will prevail.
Dennis Bayak is the voice of the Winnipeg Jets. You all know that. He joins us from his off-season abode in British Columbia. Dennis, it's great to see you, buddy. Thanks for waking up early with us. I hope you have a tea time or something. Looks like a beautiful day in the background there.
Actually, the tea time was tomorrow, but we're heading to temperatures in the 40s, so I don't know if... I'm not sure if that tea time is going to have somebody on the tee box or not, but and I don't mind the hot weather, but that's hot.
That, yeah, to be clear, we're talking 40 degrees Celsius, not correct. Fahrenheit.
Correct. Yes. But no, hey, you guys keep doing what you're doing. Great platform here. Much needed, and keep doing what you're doing.
Thanks, Dennis. We'll see you back on Winnipeg very soon.
Yep. Take care, man.
Take care. There he goes. Dennis Bayak, good friend of ours, good friend of all Winnipeg Jets fans. Let's take a break. When we come back, we'll talk a little bit about Blake Wheeler, his usage for the upcoming season. Craig Button joins us in about 15 minutes' time. Much more Jets talk to come. You're listening, you're watching, you're chatting with the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on YouTube and all of our social media platforms. Hour number two of the Illegal Curve Hockey Show starts now here on YouTube and all of our social media platforms. Dave Minuk is in my top right. Ezra Ginsberg is beneath both of us. Gentlemen, hour number two starts with a conversation about Blake Wheeler, Winnipeg Jets captain, and his usage for the upcoming season. We know that Wheeler's year was, I think, at best up and down. There were certainly some very low marks where the topic du jour was, what's wrong with Blake Wheeler? He got better at times as the year went on. But is this the off season where Wheeler himself, as the captain of the Winnipeg Jets and Jets management, have to have that hard discussion with him about accepting a change in his role for next year? Not saying he's going to be on the fourth line or anything, because that's clearly not what it's going to be. But is a time that they sit down with Wheeler and, you know, agree that it's time for a guy like Nikolaj Ehlers to get those increased minutes, and maybe less is going to be more for Blake Wheeler success-wise.
Yeah, and I don't necessarily know if the two are related, because I think we've been talking about, I'm talking about Ehlers and Wheeler, Drew, because we've been talking about this for a long time, that, you know, Ehlers is the most dynamic offensive player and he should be on the first power play unit, even though the second power play unit at times, guys, really looked like the first power play unit. But I don't know, you know, it's a good question, Drew, but I don't necessarily know if that's a difficult conversation. Like, let's be honest here, guys. I think Blake Wheeler, you know, knows that, you know, there are elements of his game that aren't as good as they were 3 or 4 years ago. right? Like, he has to know that. Like, he's just not the same player. But, you know, having said that, I mean, he was almost a point per game player this past season with 46 points in 50 games, and he was pretty good in the playoffs as well. But I think, you know, it goes back to what we were talking about a lot during the regular season, in that a lot of Blake Wheeler's damage is done on the power play. And at even strength, he hasn't been producing like he did, say, back in, you know, 2017-18. So absolutely, I think, you know, a conversation needs to happen in terms of, you know, Wheeler's role potentially changing, you know, whether that means, Drew, he's on the second power play unit, and whether that means he's on the second line. Like, I absolutely think, you know, Wheeler, you know, should have a lower role. I just don't think he's necessarily suited for a top line right wing role. He just, it's just the reality based on the way he's played. And obviously, you know, he can work really hard in the off season and he can work on, you know, some of the things, right. But I mean, at the end of the day, he's making $8.25 million. He's the highest paid forward on the Jets. So yeah, he's not going to be on the fourth line, and most likely he's not going to be on the third line. But I definitely think, you know, you're going to see a guy who, you know, has a decreased role on the team. It doesn't mean Wheeler's not an important player for this team. He's the captain, of course. But he's just not able to do, like, think about when Blake Wheeler used to, you know, break down, you know, the right wing or even the left wing with his speed and cut in and score those highlight type of real goals. You know, at 34 years old, he's just, I'm not saying he can't do that. He just doesn't do it as much as he used to. So I think it's just really a reality check, but, I think it would be ridiculous to say that, you know, Wheeler is going to be off the power play units and, you know, he's going to be a checker next year. It's just, it's not going to happen. But I do think, you know, that his role on the team absolutely has to be, you know, I don't know if you want to call it analyzed, or it has to be revisited, you know, amongst the Jets coaching staff.
Almost tweaked to some extent, Dave. I mean, you know, to quote Mark Twain, you know, the reports of my death are greatly exaggerated. Yeah, Mark Twain was a more prolific writer, but to quote
Mark Twain played on our softball team.
Yeah, to quote Mark Twain, I'll try that one again, about reports of his death being greatly exaggerated. Do you think there's an element of that with Blake Wheeler? I mean, he's not the same player he was 4 or 5 years ago when he was, say, an all-star right winger in the NHL. And I don't mean, you know, all-star game. I mean, end of year all-star when the NHL comes out with their all-star teams. But, you know, do you think that there's, you know, that, you know, that everybody writing him off might provide him a little bit more fuel entering this coming season when it starts in October again?
Well, who knows? Because according to the players, they never listen to what the media is saying anyway. So I'm not so sure that would be an opportunity for them to fuel up based on their claims. Look, I think there's sometimes opportunity knocks when you have less responsibility. I think that if you can have a player like a Nikolai, should you bring on the Mark Train? That's funny. Way to go, Leighton Dennis. But I think it's one of those situations, Drew, that it may be an opportunity for him. You know, if you're giving a guy like Nikolai Ehlers, who at his age is and his ability is ready for a first line wing role on this Jets team. And you can argue, which I think Paul Maurice has tried to, that maybe his level of success is because of the minutes that he's been given. But maybe it's time to see if that success continues with elevated minutes, and maybe for Blake Wheeler, reduced role, reduced minutes. And we're not talking, there's not a huge disparity between what a first line winger and a second line winger on this Jets team, really, in terms of usage play. But maybe that's a better opportunity for Blake Wheeler. And, you know, he and Pierre-Luc Dubois, as we've talked about, can form some chemistry, get that opportunity to kind of, you know, help Pierre-Luc Dubois along in his game with the Winnipeg Jets within the system of the team. And then you have that opportunity for Blake Wheeler to continue to have success on the power play, because if you're playing less minutes, especially you're no longer playing against that top D pairing, your body might be a little bit fresher, maybe a greater opportunity for Blake Wheeler and for the team. So, I mean, ultimately, I actually don't even know. Like, to me, Blake Wheeler, for all of his prickliness sometimes, ultimately, I don't see him as an I guy. Like, he is a team guy. And if he knows that what's best for this team is for him to be on the second line wing, in a second line wing role, then he'll play a second line wing role. And if it means that the Jets are going to be a better team, have more success, I don't see him at this point in his career looking for I success. I really do see him looking for team success. And so ultimately, I just don't see Blake Wheeler having any issues with a, quote, reduced role or reduced capacity for him on this Jets team.
Does Paul Maurice know that? Does Paul Maurice subscribe to the less might be more when it comes to Blake Wheeler? Or has he got such blinders on when it comes to sort of that first line of Scheifele and Wheeler that he can't think outside the box? I mean, he just, you know, it's his comfort zone. It is his comfort level having Scheifele and Wheeler together playing the biggest minutes. I don't know, and you know, I'm asking you guys your opinion. I don't know if Paul Maurice can sort of mentally get over that hurdle.
Yeah, and what I think is as important, Drew, as you know, first line versus second line or first power play unit versus second power play unit is who is driving these lines, right? Like, and we talked about Nick Ehlers, and the two guys that drive the lines are Nick Ehlers and Mark Scheifele. Those are your two best offensive players, your two best play drivers. Blake Wheeler is not a play driver anymore. Like, he's great on the power play, right? Like, he can set up on the power play. Even once in a while, he'll rip a nice shot, right? But, you know, in terms of your question about Paul Maurice, I mean, I don't have the answer, right? Like, and I'm not, you know, giving you a cop-out answer here, Drew. I just, obviously, you know, Wheeler has meant so much to this organization for the last 10 years, and specifically, you know, over the last 4 or 5 years, just what he's done, not only to get the Jets into the playoffs, but, you know, that 2018 run obviously stands out. But I think you have to look at, you know, and Dave talks about this a lot. Where is Blake Wheeler? Where are you putting him that gives him the best chance for success, right? Like, mm-hmm. Is that playing with Mark Scheifele? I would argue that it's probably playing with Pierre-Luc Dubois, because I think Nikolai Ehlers should be playing with Mark Scheifele. He's your most dynamic offensive player.
Let me stop you right there then, Ezzy. Then who drive? You know, you just talked about it. Scheifele and Ehlers are your two best drivers. You know, is that mean that you need Dubois to be the driver of that second line? If Ehlers and Scheifele are together, and they're obviously that first line should succeed, it would be crazy to me that a line with, let's say, Connor, Scheifele, and Ehlers wouldn't succeed. Who's driving that second line to get the Jets a similar level of success?
Well, yeah, it's Pierre-Luc Dubois has to be better, guys. Like, we talked about that after the Montreal series. And obviously, you know, Dubois had a tough year with, you know, his 2-week quarantine and the trade and everything like that, shortened season. But yeah, Dubois is going to have to, you know, be more of an offensive driver. And, you know, it's going to be, you know, interesting to see what happens, you know, with the other winger on that second line, right? Because Paul Stastny was the winger on that second line at times. And we don't know if he's going to be re-signed. So does that mean if Andrew Copp re-signs, he could be the winger on that second line, right? Like, could you have a second line of Andrew Copp, Pierre-Luc Dubois, and Blake Wheeler? I would have no problem with that line. But I just think that what we're talking about here is, you know, what is the ideal role for Wheeler? And it's at this point in his career, he's not enough of a play driver on that first line. Again, Wheeler should be in the top six, in my opinion. Like, you can't put Blake Wheeler with Adam Lowry and Mason Appleton and ask him to play a checking role, in my opinion. I know there's some people in the chat that think he's more suited to be a third liner. I don't care what anybody says. You can't have a guy, your captain, making $8.25 million a year playing on the third line.
It's just that wouldn't be a role that he would be built for success. And nor are the Jets going to ask him to waive his no move clause to expose him to Seattle. I mean, I've seen some of those comments in the chat, and I appreciate the creativity, but it's just not realistically going to happen, no matter how much of a team guy Blake Wheeler is. And I have no reason, and he is very much, to Dave's point, about the team. The team is not going to ask him that, and he's not going to accept that. It's just not, it's a non-starter. I mean, it was different given the circumstances with Toby Enstrom when they did that a number of years ago. It's not going to happen with Wheeler at this point in his career, Dave.
No. I mean, again, we're not talking, you're not playing Blake Wheeler on the fourth line, and, nor should you. I mean, look, he still has a talent, to your point, Drew. He was, there's elements of his game that need to be improved. Why they played him when he was injured the way they did, or not at 100%. No, I mean, that's ultimately something that they have to figure out, why they would have chosen to do that when they could give him the opportunity to rest.
Yeah.
I understand these guys are warriors and they want to play and da-da-da-da-da.
That's where the coach has to step in and say, Blake, you need the time off. We don't need you playing at, you know, 40% right now.
Especially at that point when the Jets really weren't having a lack of success, right? They were, you know, they'd win one or two, they'd lose, but they weren't on any sort of streaks where they had big concerns about their success for the season. So You know, look, I think everybody is kind of, we've hit that point, right? Like your Blake Wheeler still has an effective player, still can do a lot of good things for this Winnipeg Jets team. You're not removing him, but there's elements. I mean, look, I'm not putting it all on Blake Wheeler. Mark Scheifele and Kyle Connor weren't great defensively this year. It's not as if somehow they were like defensive stalwarts and Blake Wheeler was an anchor around their necks. It's not that wasn't the case at all. And so, like, guys have to get better, period. Like, it's not just Blake Wheeler. This is that you know, like, Kyle Connor's flyby on the fully shorthanded goal, notwithstanding, there's elements of, you know, or withstanding, I should say, you know, there's elements of all their games that need improvement. So, yeah. You know, can you mix and match? And, like, this group, while they've been good, has a lot to prove next year, right? I mean, you know, you're going to have a really potentially, and Mike, I think, was saying this in the chat. I'm inclined to agree with him. I think a full training camp for Pierre-Luc Dubois, an opportunity to be in Winnipeg for the summer. You know, he'll be here. His parents are here. He'll have the full training camp with the team. And even though it's a shortened offseason, he'll still have that opportunity to rest, recover, get ready with these guys, skate with these guys before training camp even really gets going. He'll be much more comfortable. I think you're going to have an excellent 1-2 punch in Mark Scheifele and Pierre-Luc Dubois. I think the wingers are almost interchangeable at that point, because if you have both guys going, you're going to have an effective. And again, what do we talk about? What do we talk about when they acquire Pierre-Luc Dubois? It's all about center depth with this team. Yeah. And we're seeing it with Montreal with success in the forward depth. So at center depth, sorry. So that's just going to be critical for this Jets team next year.
Let's leave the Wheeler conversation right there. We're pleased to welcome back to the program TSN Director of Scouting, a good friend of ours, Craig Button, joins us on the line right now to talk about the upcoming NHL draft, to talk about the Stanley Cup Finals. Craig, good morning. Nice to see you. How are you, buddy?
Oh, things are good. Nice to see you guys on this nice summer day. How are things in Manitoba?
Things in Manitoba, well, our restrictions have loosened. We've moved from code red to code orange, so people can go out and have a drink on a patio with a buddy starting, I believe, at 11 a.m. this morning. So I think people are feeling pretty good about that sort of thing.
Yeah, I know. It's been significant sacrifice by so many people across the country. And, you know, I think we see the path forward. So happy for everybody. You know, hopefully in the weeks to come, we can see more and more of that interaction with the people we love and our friends and everything that goes with it.
Absolutely, Craig. Well said. Obviously, we brought you on to talk about the upcoming NHL draft. It's less than a month away. But before we get into that, I have to start with the Stanley Cup final now. Now that we know the two teams, to no one's surprise, the Tampa Bay Lightning are there. You know, they were a preseason favorite, obviously the defending Stanley Cup champion. I think to everyone's surprise, the Montreal Canadiens are there. Can Cinderella's slippers still fit, or is this going to be where, I guess to torture that analogy, to where the ball ends and she turns back into a pumpkin?
Well, here's what I would say, and I'm going to ask you guys a question after I give you my answer. But, you know, when you think about the Montreal Canadiens, they're 11-2 since going down 3-1 to the Toronto Maple Leafs. And when you watch the way they've played, it's not accidental. I mean, there's times when teams get on a roll and you go, oh, geez, the goaltender's absolutely stood on his head. You got this break here and that break there. The Montreal Canadiens have been full marks. They have played really good right through their lineup. And, you know, they beat good teams, you know, the Winnipeg Jets included, the Vegas Golden Knights, you know, where everybody thought Montreal would get steamrolled. But, you know, the Minnesota Wild are a team that I would call a lowercase Montreal Canadiens team. Their goaltender isn't as good. Their blue line isn't as big and sturdy. And they don't have the offensive depth that the Montreal Canadiens have, specifically down the middle of the ice. And they took Vegas right to game 7. They showed a path to how to beat the Vegas Golden Knights. And Montreal, you know, did exactly that. So, you know, you get I heard Steven Stamkos following the game last night after the Islanders, after Tampa Bay had won. And Steven said, he goes, we are going to face the best team we've seen in this year's playoff. Montreal is going to face the best team. That's what happens when you get to the Stanley Cup final. You've won 12 games each. And again, and the 11-2 record in their last 13 games, I mean, that's pretty impressive. So do I think they have a chance? Absolutely, I think they have a chance. Absolutely. I thought it was a toss-up. I thought if they could do what they needed to do against Vegas, they could beat Vegas. And, you know, they did exactly that. So, you know, obviously the clock's going to strike midnight for one of these two teams. And, you know, John Cooper said, hey, winning a Stanley Cup is special. When you win two in a row, you put yourself in a special category. So, you know, Montreal's trying to do something that hasn't been done by a Canadian team since 93, and certainly unexpected. And the Tampa Bay Lightning are a little bit more expected. Now, here's my question for you, and then you can come back to me. But you guys watch all the time. I think Mark Scheifele is a superstar in the National Hockey League. And a lot of people, I don't think, you know, share that view, not you guys. How much of a difference could have he made against the Montreal Canadiens in that series?
Obviously, a world of difference, as we all know.
Absolutely.
I mean, it's amazing when you think about the Habs, and to take nothing away from the run that they've been on, but they face a Toronto team that loses John Tavares, one of their top two centermen, you know, with that terrible injury. You know, the Jets without Scheifele, you know, self-inflicted, whatever you think about the suspension from the Department of Player Safety. And Vegas, I mean, I don't think you can overstate, you know, losing Chandler Stephenson. He doesn't have the cachet that Scheifele and Tavares have, but Chandler Stephenson being out for a few games was certainly, he's an important player to the Vegas Golden Knights. So Montreal, you know, they don't need to apologize for that, but they are certainly fortuitous in some sense with the timing.
Well, and Chandler Stephenson on an important scale, but not as a lesser player. But you know, they didn't just lose Mark Scheifele; they had a diminished Kyle Connor and a diminished Blake Wheeler. You know, which also helps right now. Now you don't have. I mean, it's not that those guys don't try, and that's what happened with Chandler Stephenson going out. You got a diminished Mark Stone and a diminished Max Pacioretty, and you know the playoffs are about attrition, but. You know, I think Mark Scheifele is a phenomenal player. I really do. And I'm not saying it would have been different, but you know, the first game they played against Montreal wasn't a good one, but I can't think that Mark Scheifele couldn't have made that Winnipeg Jets team a more formidable challenge. When I talk about like finding a way to win some games and making them uncomfortable.
No, absolutely, Craig. And I think, you know, we would all agree that aside from Connor Hellebuck, he's the one guy that you don't want to miss for three games in a series, right? And, you know, we wanted to ask you about, I'm not sure if a, you know, semi-trailer just went by there, but...
the windows are open, Ezra. You know, and the windows will... I don't have air conditioning here in Calgary. Okay. So, and I mean, we get those cool... But we're in the middle of what they're calling a massive heat wave, high 30s and everything. You're used to that in Manitoba.
Oh, yeah. No,
we don't get that here, so...
Yeah, we get at least a month and a half of summer every year, Craig. You know that. We want to get to the 2021 NHL draft. And obviously, you know, the Jets, you know, don't have the 10th overall pick. They're going to later in the first round. But wanted to ask you specifically about Cole Caufield and Nick Suzuki, because, you know, we have you on every single year, and we're obviously grateful that you've been joining us for, you know, around 10 years on the show. And, you know, I remember, you know, talking to you about Cole Caufield, and you know, some people thought he might go a little bit earlier, but 15th overall, you know, a couple of years ago in the draft. And then you have Nick Suzuki, obviously, you know, Vegas drafts him, but then he's traded to Montreal. And I think you would agree that it's not a coincidence, you know, that these two players, you know, have had a big part in, you know, this Montreal Canadiens run, because watching that line with, you know, Caufield, Suzuki and Toffoli, I mean, they were good against Toronto, obviously good against Winnipeg, and caused all sorts of problems for the Golden Knights in that conference final.
Well, you know, one of the things with Nick and Cole, And Tyler certainly does too. I mean, he's a really good goal scorer. But, you know, Nick is such a strong, smart two-way centerman. I mean, he doesn't have the size and the power of Mark Scheifele, but he's got the same processing speed as Mark in terms of his thinking and understanding how to extract the best out of other players and the players he plays with. I mean, when you think about that goal where he set up Eric Staal, he goes down the left wing boards. He draws Alex Pietrangelo right into his web. Alex Pietrangelo. Like, I mean, we're talking about a top defenseman that he just kind of pulls him in, and boom, it's wide open in the slot for Staal. And, you know, Nick has always been a player, and having watched him for as long as I have, he's always had the brain power. He's never been a flash and dash player, but he was the MVP of the OHL playoffs. His team won the championship in Guelph. You know, he's another player when you talk about moments and you talk about bigger games. And I saw Barry Trotz talking about Justin Williams. He said, good players don't become smaller in big games. And that's Nick Suzuki. And you know, and it's not like it's hard. Like there's pressures and the checking is tighter. The demands are greater. And, you know, Nick doesn't have that. But and then, you know, I always said this about Jack Hughes and Cole Caulfield. People would say, wow, Cole's playing with Jack Hughes. The goal scorer needs the playmaker, and the playmaker needs the goal scorer. Like, you know, so Jack's brilliance in playmaking needed the finishing ability of Cole Caulfield, and Cole needed the playmaking of Jack, right? They went perfectly together, right? Like, nobody ever said that, you know, when you got a top-end scorer, you know, and Mike Bossy, and say, wow, you know what? Like, he had Brian Trottier. Yeah, we know he had Brian Trottier, but Brian Trottier had Mike Bossy, right? Mm-hmm. So, you know, and so I think that they, you know, it's the proverbial 1+1=3 with those two guys. But, you know, again, Nick and Cole have never, ever, in all the years I've watched them play, have never, ever been shrinking violets in the championship games, in the big games, in the ones that – and that's what you really want to – you just want the players to play to their strengths. It's not about exceeding their abilities, but don't fall short. And, you know, you've seen it for years. I've seen it for years where players, you know, for one reason or another, you know, sometimes in those biggest moments don't have their best games.
You know, Craig, from one Cole to another, because we got to ask you about Cole Perfetti. I mean, I watched every game he played with the Manitoba Moose this season. He went from a guy who was in the perimeter, getting points on the power play, to suddenly going, attacking the net. Pascal Vincent described one of his goals, you know, against Belleville as just a goal scorer's goal, a guy who's willing to go into the tough areas. That was a transition in his game that we saw from the start of his unexpectedly first pro season to the end. And then obviously ending it with the World Championship and getting a chance to be with Team Canada. From your perspective, from a development perspective, because he's not, you know, with everything going back to normal, he won't be available for the AHL next year. If he isn't able to make the Jets roster, do you still see that good development path for Cole Perfetti in the OHL?
You know, Dave, it's a great question. So, and you know, the fact that you were able to watch him and watch that progression in the American Hockey League is so significant for a young player. You guys know what I think of Cole. I love him. I think he's fantastic. And you know, the way you described him too, Dave, he's always played up at age group coming up. So, you know, players, you know, when you're younger, you're not as big, you're not as strong. Sometimes you don't. You recognize, why am I going to go there? I'm not going to have success. And yet sometimes we judge them and go, well, he's not going to the tough areas. It's not that they won't. Maybe they just know they can't. And I think with Cole, having watched this over the years, that once he figures it out and once he gets comfortable understanding how he gets his strengths, and he does. And I think you saw that, Dave, over the course of the year.
Yeah.
You know, when I think about Cole and I think about what he's gone through. So, the pause happens in March 2020, right? So he's having a fantastic, I mean, he's a fantastic player in the OHL, fantastic, right? Like one of the best. And then the pause. So then, you know, it goes all the way down the stretch. He gets drafted, goes to the World Junior camp. And, you know, and as time went on at the World Junior, he got better there. He got better and better. And remember, he was a late cut on the previous year's gold medal team. Then he comes to the American Hockey League. Right. And now you're playing pro hockey. You're playing against players that are physically more mature, mentally more mature, you know, and they're going to challenge you in different ways. And you pointed it out. He got better and better. He kind of adjusted. Then he goes to the World Championships, right? Like even a level a little bit higher and playing with really good NHL players and against some really good players. And so now you understand even better, you know, where it's at. So he comes to training camp this September in Winnipeg, right? And I really think he's prepared, really, really prepared to challenge for a spot. Now, to answer your question, like Cole, if he has to go back to the OHL, I think he'll go back and I think he'll play well. I don't think it's good for his development. I'm not one to rush development. You guys know that. I'm one that always says you need more time, not less. But when I go through that whole step-by-step, what he went through the last year, that's a step back. That's a step back in terms of competition. And you know, this is one of those scenarios where, You know, I get where the OHL and the CHL says, okay, we want to play. If you're about development, you should let that player go.
Mm-hmm. Saturday morning. About
development, right? Like development mm-hmm. means allowing a player to go and meet the next challenge. And I don't think that Cole going back to Saginaw or the OHL or anywhere, and somebody will say, oh, yeah, he'll end up on a good team. He gets a chance to compete for a Memorial Cup. That's not development. That's team selfishness.
For Saturday morning, you're live with the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're on our YouTube channel and all of our social media platforms. Our guest is TSN Director of Scouting, Craig Button, talking about the upcoming 2021 NHL draft, less than a month away. Craig, from a Cole to another Cole to a Corson. Corson Sulemans is who, in your latest mock draft, you have the Jets projected to take at 17th overall. I guess sort of a two-part question for you. You know, from the scouting perspective, you know, Corson Sulemans is a guy who's played, by my count, 14 hockey games in the last year, maybe year and a bit, mm-hmm. 8 in the Alberta Junior Hockey League, 6 with Team Canada at the under-18s. So how difficult is it to get really an accurate scouting report on a player like him and like so many others in this draft class? And then secondly, what is it about Corson Sulemans that you like that makes you think he goes 17th overall to the Winnipeg Jets?
Well, first of all, as you guys well know, my mock draft is exactly right. That's exactly what he's going to take. Right? I joke about it. I do joke about it because it's funny. Oh, they're not taking this guy. And I always say, the NHL teams don't know who they're taking right now. How yeah. do you think I'm going to know? And just so you know, I tell people, you don't know either. But I'm not trying to pretend I know. I'm just trying to say, hey, this is a player or players that fit. I think this would be a nice fit for this team within the range of potential. And I recognize that. So I'll get to the Corson question on that at 17 in a second. But you know, I've said this often, and I not only believe it to be true, I know it to be true. The Winnipeg Jets have as strong a scouting group and as strong a scouting process as anybody in the National Hockey League. They are that good. And, excuse me. So, you know, you're going to tap into the 14 games as best as you can. You're going to try to, you know, you got to evaluate hard. It's like knowing, oh, my Lord. Like, think about Corson coming to the under-18, plays the first game, everybody's excited, and then he doesn't play the second game. People are going, oh, boy, they know he's a good player. Now it's like, oh, boy, that's one less game we get to evaluate him. Comes back. So, you know, one of the things, just to share this with you guys, a number of scouts would say to me, did you see that young guy? I said, listen, you guys, stop watching underage players. You don't have time to watch underage players. Watch the players that you're going to have to make a decision on coming up, because like you know who the good young players are, Connor Bedard, Shane Wright. You don't need to spend any time watching them. So, you know, again, like all teams, and specifically the Winnipeg Jets, you go in and you're watching, you know, those areas of his game, or any player's game, that you're trying to project to the NHL. Skating is still skating. Puck skills are still puck skills. You know, thinking is still thinking. And so do you have as much game data to evaluate? No, you don't. But you can still evaluate those things. And for teams, you're going to go back in time. I mean, Corson has played in some pretty on some pretty good teams. He was on a national championship team with Brooks in the Alberta Junior Hockey League that won the Junior A championship. He came right out of midget hockey and was a top four defenseman on that team. So you're going to try to go back in time and then try to assess how much he's improved. With respect to Corson and why I put him in the Winnipeg Jets slot, I really think two things. Number one, Corson, I think, is a really good offensive defenseman. I think he's a defenseman that can get into the offensive zone and make plays and score goals. He can shoot the puck. He can be a real offensive threat. And then, you know, he's got all the attributes. And then I watch how the Winnipeg Jets develop defensemen. And I just think that, like, that type of skill set, those types of attributes, they've done a fantastic job of identifying them and then developing them. And, you know, that type of a player that adds that type of an element to your team, you know, so I look at it as a fit, and that's all it is. Does it mean he's the only fit? No, but that's why I had Corson in that spot.
You know, Craig, just, you know, going back to, you know, the mock draft, and we are going to hold you accountable to every single pick. We're going to have you back on July 25th to break down every pick. But, you know, obviously, you know, Owen Power, you know, represented Canada along with Cole Perfetti in Latvia. You know, he's number one on your list. And I wanted to ask you about, you know, the Sabres and whether you think that they could be looking at Matthew Beniers seriously because of the Jack Eichel effect, right? Like, and we don't know, you know, when Eichel is going to be traded. I think, you know, most people, you know, can read the tea leaves, and it looks like, you know, Eichel, you know, could easily be traded by the Sabres. But do you think that factors in, or do you think that's kind of a ridiculous notion and they're going to take the best player, you know, that they think is available at number one, which obviously, you know, very well could be Owen Power of the University of Michigan?
So a couple things there that I would say to you, Ezra, is that number one, I think you always have to consider different options. And, you know, options within a band of players, within a grouping of players. And if you're talking about Matt Beniers, I think you talk about what does this mean for our team? Because while you're selecting based on one draft, you're also looking at your team. And you know, if you're going to trade Jack Eichel, what else could you be potentially getting in return that we don't know, right? So, but the Buffalo Sabres do. So now they start to look and they start to say, well, we might be getting a good young defenseman back. And I'll just give you an example. So I got asked this question on radio a couple weeks ago. Would you trade, if you're Buffalo, would you trade Jack Eichel to the Anaheim Ducks for their third overall pick, Jamie Drysdale and Trevor Zegras? I said, yep. And that was my answer, yep. So the reason, and I don't know if that's true or not. I mean, I don't want to spread rumors, and I'm not going to, but so now, all of a sudden, you get Jamie Drysdale, you get a Trevor Zegras, right? You get the third overall pick, right? So now you start to think, okay, what does this mean? I got 1 and 3, like, you know. So I think that all has to go into your thinking about what builds out your team, right? And, you know, and then what are other teams potentially offering you if you really are going to take Matty Beniers or you want to take Matty Beniers? What else will they offer you, you know, for that first overall pick if somebody covets Owen Power? So I think it's prudent. I think it's smart. I mean, we take the picks in isolation, but teams are looking at it, you know, from like kind of a multidimensional view. Like you're looking at it from, okay, who's the best player? Who do we like and everything? But also for your team and like what fits, considering, as you point out, a pretty significant discussion going on about Jack Eichel's future in Buffalo. So, you know, I think that is totally plausible. And quite frankly, I'd be surprised if the Buffalo Sabres aren't looking, because it's not one team phoning the Buffalo Sabres on Jack Eichel. It's multiple teams phoning Jack Eichel.
TSN Director of Scouting Craig Button is our guest on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Saturday morning, we're live on YouTube and all of our social media platforms.
You know, Craig, you talked about, you know, scouting staffs being ready, and I've talked to some people who within the scouting world who say that they're prepared for this draft, but this is going to be probably a draft like no other. And do you think that this, it'll be very interesting, I think, you know, retrospectively, like generally it always is, but more so this year than any other, because there could be so many opportunities, and we see so much damage done by, and in that, I mean that in a positive way, with scouting staffs when you're able to get like a Mason Appleton in the sixth round, a Connor Hellebuck in the fifth round. So do you see that opportunity here for teams to be able to draft gems that are going to turn into just dynamic players for teams in a few years that aren't necessarily viewed in that way right now?
Absolutely. And you know what, just because, you know, you talk about Connor, or you talk about Mason, and you know, we see players like a Braden Point. I just use Braden, you know, he goes in the third round based on, and that happens when you have a lot of opportunity to watch players, right? So,
yeah.
So I think when you use the word gem, I think we've seen it in previous drafts, and I think we're going to see it again this year. You know, one of the things that I'm going to be really curious to watch, what are teams going to do? Like, I think in a year where everybody's on the same playing field, level playing field, nobody's got an advantage over anybody else, even though they all think they do. And I mean, I'm talking about playing. You know, they've all been able to watch the players, and they're going to mine information. If it was me, and this is my philosophy in this year's draft, swing for the fences. Swing for the fences in the third round, the second round, the fourth round, the fifth round, because that's where you're going to get gems. And if there's a player you think has a potential to be a really good offensive defenseman that might be only 5'10" right now, and maybe you haven't seen him as much, that's like, I think projection and a confident projection. When I say confident, yeah, that's what we see him as. Go for it. That's where I think you can you can hit some real big home runs. And, you know, even if you don't, doubles are good too. Like Mason Appleton is a really good double, right? Like, I mean, yeah. But that's how I'd be approaching it. There'd be nothing that I – everything for me would be about who's got the greatest upside. Let's go.
And then – so that'll lead me to the next question then, Craig. Looking at those guys who might not necessarily be top of mind, those guys who might be home runs later in the second or the third round, the guys who might be the diamonds in the rough, who jumps out at you right now and as you've been doing your prep work as a guy that might be that kind of player?
Okay, so I think you just tricked me, Drew. Because when I say that, because now when I say you tricked me, and you're smart, you're all smart guys. So really what you've done is you forced me to prepare to come back with my answer in the next week or so, right? That's what you've done. Right?
That's perfect. We can rain check that answer.
Okay, and that's what I'm going to do. I'm going to rain check it instead of just going out. Because I can give some really, really good examples of that, right? But like I don't want to do it off the top of my head because I don't think that that's fair. But like, so you Ezra, you arrange that, let me know when you want me back before the draft, and that'll be the rain check question. But you know, again, like you look at a player like you guys watch him a lot, Neil Pionk. Like I watch Neil play in the USHL, and you know, you watch him, he always had the same initiative, but he wasn't big, he wasn't mature, like physically mature and everything. But how you watch him play today with the Jets, a really good NHL defenseman, that's how he played. But so when I say, it's easy to look and say, okay, this is how big he is, okay, you know, this is where he's at. But when you talk about projection and you say, well, if that guy grows, if that guy gets physically stronger, this is what you think. That's what I mean about going for it. And like swing for the fences, right? And so if you draft Neil Pionk in the seventh round or the sixth round or the fifth round, depending on where you think you get him, that's the type of player that I'm talking about. Like that, and I'll have examples for you, I promise you. Like at different positions and everything. But you know, that's the type of thinking that I would like to see, that now I'm gonna evaluate, but I want to see that employed. You know, as my good friend Craig Ramsey said, safe as death.
We will rain check that answer and we'll bring you on back on before the draft in about, I guess the draft's a little less than a month from now. Yeah. Let you go on this last question then, Craig. You know, the sample sizes for so many of these players this year are all over the place. Mm-hmm. The guys that played U.S. college obviously have more games that scouts were able to watch. Some of the other guys who played, be it overseas or, you know, if they were playing Canadian junior hockey, much smaller sample sizes. If you're a first-round player, a projected first-round pick, maybe late first round, wherever it might be, this year in particular, are you better off having that small sample size for scouts to have watched and maybe have the unknowns, or the bigger sample size where scouts could maybe pick apart your game a little bit more?
Well, it's a great question, so I'm going to answer this in multiple ways. You know, if you want to make excuses for not getting good players, you can fall back on the small sample size in the future. Wow, we didn't get a chance to see him that much. Right? The scouts go into games, and I'm kidding. I really am kidding about that. But, you know, you want to try to – honestly, scouting is about picking apart players' games. It really is, because ultimately what you get a crack in each round. You know, you might have extra picks here or there, but you're really getting one crack at a player to try to help your organization in the future. That's what you get at, right? And you want to gain as much confidence in the player you're going to select or the group of players you're evaluating. So, you know, picking the player apart, that's a necessary part of the job. It really is. So and when you can have more opportunity to gain that confidence, I call it a confidence building exercise. You're going to have that opportunity. But I also know this very much about scouts and the scouting in the NHL. You know, when you're going to watch a player, you have to go in to watch a player with the idea we have to evaluate hard. We have to go in and watch this player hard, because what happens if we don't get a chance to see him again? What happens if he gets hurt? That's always been, something that's been. So the NHL scouts, like, it might be November and you go in, I'm evaluating hard. So even though it's a small sample size, and I go back, like, that means, like, if you're watching a kid in his underage year in junior hockey or at the under 17 show, you got to go in and evaluate hard. You got to evaluate like that, because that's going to be data and that's going to be information that's going to help build that confidence that I point out, right? So do I think that, you know, is there greater uncertainty this year? Absolutely. Is it going to lead to a little bit less of that confidence that you would desire when you're selecting players? Absolutely it is. But I'd also believe that with the experiences that teams and specifically, you know, the Winnipeg Jets have with respect to their staff and their group and knowing each other and understanding what process that they go through and how to, you know, maximize it, I think that they'll go into the draft and have a great opportunity to draft not only good players, but players that they're confident in, despite the fact that they didn't get as much viewings as they would have liked.
And Craig, hold on, because Drew put you on the spot, Craig, I work with Hockey Manitoba, so I'll give a shout-out to Connor Roulette, who you're very familiar with, won a gold with Team Canada at the U18. So he's a guy that and Carson Lambos as well is you know, you had at 16. So I'll throw those two Winnipeggers out there before we have you on next. So because Drew put you on the spot, I'll bail you out with those two Manitoba products.
Carson's a really good player. Carson's a really good player. And, you know, I'll just finish with this about Carson. Like, Carson, like, we talk about those top four defensemen. I'm not so sure that, you know, like, for me, Carson might be just on the outside of it, like, and Corson as well, Carson and Corson. But I don't know, and this is part of the evaluation. I'm not so sure how far out of it they are. Like, you know, those are two good players. You know, the Carson, that'll be fun. Carson and Corson, Carson and Corson, Carson and Carson. But they're both good players. And, you know, we started off talking about Chandler Stephenson, and it's interesting. And, you know, when you bring up Connor, Ezra, you know, in my notes, you know, I have a couple of times put Chandler Stephenson ? On Connor Roulette. That type of a player, maybe not a high-end offensive player, but a player that can play in a lot of different situations and play with good players and help them be better. So, you know, there's my commentary back on Hockey Manitoba, so no problem.
Love it.
From Cole to Cole to Carson to from Cole to Cole to Carson to Carson from Craig. I think we got that.
Yeah, what about Carson Kuhlman on the Boston Bruins, right? Like, he must think, what is why I have a clone out there?
Yeah. Oh yeah, wouldn't that be something? Yeah.
Enough. Too many hard C's or K's or whatever it might be. Craig Button, TSN Director of Scouting. Craig, we'll do it again in a few weeks' time. Yeah. I appreciate it. Always appreciate your time and your insight. Thanks so much for joining us this morning.
Always a pleasure to join you. Thank you guys for having me. And I look forward to joining again in a couple of weeks. Have a great Saturday.
Thanks, you too, Craig. There he goes. Craig Button, TSN's Director of Scouting, good friend of the program. Let's take our final commercial break. When we come back, we'll talk about the Stanley Cup final. It gets underway on Monday. The Habs and the Lightning, we'll talk about that. Lots more to come. You're listening, you're watching, you're chatting with the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on YouTube and all of our social media platforms. 10 minutes before the top of the hour, welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live here Saturday morning on YouTube and all of our social media platforms. Big thank you to Craig Button for joining us. Craig's always one of our favorites, and that was no question about that. After that entertaining and insightful interview, we'll be glad to get him back on before the draft in about less than a month's time. I want to take this opportunity to remind everybody, a big July coming up here for the Illegal Curve Hockey
Show. Huge
July. In addition to all of our regular
gigantic
Saturday shows,
colossal,
we're going to be bringing you live broadcasts related to the upcoming NHL expansion draft. So that'll be a special, if I'm not mistaken, that's a Wednesday night. So we'll do a live broadcast throughout the NHL expansion draft. We'll do a live broadcast on day one of the NHL draft, that of course being Friday night. We'll do our regular live broadcast for day two of
Ezzy's birthday.
Ezzy's birthday, so you can all get ready with your banners and your cakes and your celebratory party favors and whatnot.
Me and Mr. Leadership, Patrice Bergeron.
Yes, that's...
And J-Lo.
And J-Lo, of course, yes, I'm sure she's sitting
at home. And Anna Paquin,
Winnipegger. Yep. Actually, Anna Paquin.
And Mr. Home Run himself, Barry Bonds.
Well, there you go. It's quite the celebrity birthday. If
notice
anybody
that I didn't say Mr. Something else, by the way.
You could, like, what? Like, Mr. Steroids? You can say Mr. Steroids. It won't be a big deal. I can say it. If you're not going to say it, I'll be glad to say it. I'm pretty sure that ship has sailed, that I'm not going to get sued.
I was going to say Mr. Hall of Fame. I know I want to get Drew going on that.
No, I don't. I'm not going to get that. Doesn't rile me up. Don't worry about that. I'm not getting riled up about that. In any event, it's a big July expansion draft coverage. Draft coverage Friday and Saturday, and then free agency coverage. We'll do the free agency opens at about 12 noon, I think, on a Wednesday. We'll do a special show that night. So that, you know, 7, 8 o'clock, whatever time it's going to be, we'll do a special day one free agency recap show as well. So a big July ahead here on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on our YouTube channel.
And then, Drew, in August, none of us are going to speak to each other.
There's no question about that. In August, we'll be taking our usual hiatus, but we'll be back for the start of training camp before you know it. It'll be here. It's amazing. The next season is going to be here right before you know it. There will be no time, no downtime at all. But we look forward to bringing you all that coverage. So you'll mark that in your calendars to be sure to join us here on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on our YouTube channel. Smash the subscribe button. Hit the like button if you haven't already done so on both of those counts. Let's talk about the Stanley Cup Final. It gets underway on Monday. The Montreal Canadiens, their epic run continues. They pull off the monumental upset of the Vegas Golden Knights, a disappointing end to a great season for the Golden Knights. And the Tampa Bay Lightning, they squeak by the smallest of margins, one shorthanded goal. They squeak by the New York Islanders, and it's going to be a Tampa-Montreal Final. Can the Habs keep it going? Can they continue this Cinderella run? I mean, this is a team that, if I'm not mistaken, finished 18th overall in the NHL standings
during the regular season.
It doesn't matter at this point, but it is crazy to think about that. You know, if they ever went to the top 16, the Montreal Canadiens were not going to have been there, and instead they're in the Stanley Cup Final for the first time since 1993.
Yeah, I absolutely think they have a chance. And first off, before we get into the analysis of the Stanley Cup Final, the start times are beautiful. 7 o'clock Central for every single game. It's Monday, Wednesday, Friday. Monday, Wednesday, Friday.
No, 7 o'clock. The one game, the Sunday game is at, there's a Sunday game that's at 6 o'clock.
Well, 6 of 7, Drew, are at 7 o'clock.
Look, accuracy counts.
Okay. If the series goes to 7 games, 1 game. So 6 of 7 are at 7 o'clock. I love that. Just wanted to get that in there. You know, considering that all year long we've had games at 9, we've had games at 6. So 7 o'clock is great with the kiddos. They're usually in bed by, you know, 8.
As he needs his beauty sleep, folks. You know, you don't get that kind of youthful glow on your skin just by staying up late hours.
Exactly. Craig Button said this just, you know, half an hour ago. Since losing the 3 of 4 against Toronto, in the last 13 games, the Montreal Canadiens are 11-2. Like, this is not a fluke. This is a really good team. Now, is Tampa Bay the favorite? Yes, they're the favorite because they are the better team on paper, and they're defending Stanley Cup champions, right, guys? But I'm going with the Montreal Canadiens for the simple fact that in the first round, I picked Toronto. In the second round, I picked Winnipeg. In the third round, I picked Vegas. So obviously, I'm going to go with Montreal.
Shouldn't you pick the Lightning so Montreal wins?
I will go back to January, though, when I picked the Montreal Canadiens to go to the Stanley Cup Finals because, you know, God help us, Dave kept reminding us that he took Dallas last year. So I'm going to shove this in your face, Dave. I also picked Rod Brind'Amour to win the Jack Adams. I noticed you guys were pretty silent on Twitter when I was gloating about that one. But
blocked you a long time ago. I don't see your tweets.
That's okay, Drew. But look at, I mean,
well, I know Canadian it's okay. Team, I did it.
Yeah. But the only thing is, I also picked Vegas to go to the Stanley Cup final, but they played in the conference final. So I forgot that Vegas and Montreal would have to face each other in the conference final. So
It had to go to the rankings.
Well, I picked Vegas to win the cup against Montreal. So it's kind of funny that, you know, Vegas was knocked out by Montreal in the final. But regardless, let's get back to the series here.
Hang on. If you're done throwing out your rotator cuff, clapping yourself on the back for all your accomplishments, maybe now start analyzing the series.
I will. Okay. So Craig mentioned this. I agree with him 100%. Nikita Kucherov's health is going to be important. But I think ultimately, there's so many good storylines and there's going to be so many fascinating matchups. Andre Vasilevsky versus Carey Price, guys, this is just my opinion. It's a wash. Like, who can you give one team an advantage here in net? I don't think you can. I would probably give Montreal the edge, but Vasilevsky most likely is going to win the Vezina trophy this year. So I don't think, you know, there's any edge in goal. I think, you know, where you do have the edge is on defense. Like, look at Victor Hedman, right? Like, you know, the analytics weren't as good for Hedman. He's been pretty good through three rounds for the Lightning, right? Like, we saw Ryan McDonagh and how well he played last year. I like how David Kivas, like my Barry Horowitz mentioned. But, you know, I do think that...
my,
you know,
when Barry Horowitz mentioned.
No, I mentioned it.
Well, I was with the clapping on the back.
Well, yeah, but then I said it. Okay, we'll share that one, Drew.
Thank you. We'll share that. You
know, a washed-up wrestler from the 1990s who happened to be a good Jewish boy. But I do think, you know, you're going to give the edge to Tampa Bay when it comes to depth at forward. Like, Dave, I look at that third line, right? And Yanni Gord obviously scored the only goal in the 1-0 win, the shorthanded goal against the Islanders. But I look at that third line, and I look at Blake Coleman, and I look at Barclay Goodrow, and what stands out to me. And Joe Smith wrote about this in The Athletic. If you haven't read the article, he talks about what stands out to me. Barclay Goodrow was 1-on-4 against the Islanders yesterday. He killed about 30 seconds, if you remember, with about a minute and a half left in the game. I mean, this is a guy who was undrafted, who obviously, you know, the Lightning had to give up the first round pick. It's just depth. You have Tyler Johnson, who they tried to obviously get rid of. You know, he's on your fourth line. This is a guy who a couple of years ago had 29 goals, right? He's your fourth line center. So, you know, Patrick Maroon and Ross Colton are the other guys on that fourth line. There's just so much depth, right? Like Mikhail Sergachev and David Savard, that's your third pairing, right? Mm-hmm. Like, it's just, you go up and down the lineup, like Jan Ruda, you know, obviously, you know, he's coughed up the puck a little bit, but I just look up and down that Lightning roster and there's just so much depth. Do the Canadians have a lot of depth? Yes, of course they do. Arturi Lehkonen, you know, even though he missed the earlier part of the playoffs, like this is a guy who, you know, just seems to always step up and provide goals. But you've got, you know, Eric Staal, Corey Perry, and Joel Armia on that fourth line. So the Canadians have depth too. I think this is going to be a long series. I'm going to go with the Canadians, but obviously the Lightning have the edge when it comes to game breakers with, you know, Braden Point, Steven Stamkos, you know, Alex Killorn, players like that. So yeah, the Lightning are going to be, you know, the Habs' toughest test. But on the other hand, on the flip side, Dave, the Habs are going to be the Lightning's, you know, toughest test that they've seen so far.
Team X is going to win the series in...
I'm picking the Canadians. I'll go Canadians in seven.
Okay, there you go. We got... he's on the record, and he's been successful a lot this year.
Well, obviously, David, the Lightning are going to win in five.
Yeah, I mean, it's a sweep. In fact, they win in three. Yeah. Dave?
Well, I mean, as he's just gone through it, so I'm not going to just reiterate the points that he's made. I think that Montreal seems to be on some sort of just magic run. To the point you've made, they've had an advantage where their opponents have lost critical pieces. Kucherov could be a critical piece. Tampa's so deep that they've been able to win without Kucherov in the lineup, obviously. But that is such a big... he's such a big driver for that Tampa team. So you don't just minimize a loss like his. But again, it's offset by how deep they are. You know, Mark Dumont, our good friend, who's a special correspondent for the Habs, who we have regularly on when we're talking about the Montreal Canadiens, he doesn't want anybody picking Montreal because he feels that, you know, the Montreal Canadiens benefited best from having that underdog status. You know, it's funny. It's like, it's one of those things, like, it's hard to believe that it's been since 1993 that a Canadian team has won the Stanley Cup. So you go back and it's always ironic, right? Because you look at a team like St. Louis when they won, I think they had more Canadians on that team than any team's ever had. So it's not as if there's not Canadian players who are winning it and bringing it back to Canada, obviously, but an actual Canadian team, it's Canadian city gets to cheer. Although, I mean, the cheering that was going on after that, that win over Vegas was something else. I was trying to think, that was a different element, obviously, of things that were happening. But, you know, I mean, Drew, it's funny because you tweeted it before about how big on St. John Baptiste Day, if Montreal could actually win, what that sort of reaction would be in La Belle Provence. So that was...
And the answer was one cop car being flipped.
I'm surprised there wasn't more damage. I mean, to be perfectly... looking at that crowd that was gathered outside the arena and everything that was going on.
They wouldn't let people out of the arena.
I know. They didn't let people out of the arena saying, sorry, it's too dangerous.
And Jeff Molson had to come on the PA and be like, well, we're going to entertain you a little bit longer. But I mean, by the way, how awful is that for Vegas? You want to just get on the plane and get the hell home, and you're stuck in the arena because of all those fans. So you gotta, like, you know, Dennis said it, you remove your media hat and you look as just as a fan, and you think to yourself, it would be something for the Montreal Canadiens, the last Canadian team to win the Stanley Cup, to bring it back to Canada, and it would be something significant. I mean, but it's going to take something significant. The magic is going to have to keep going. Carey Price, I think Dennis said it, and he's right. And we talked about it when we had Mark Dumont on. How significant was that injury that allowed, or not, I mean, obviously not in a good way, but that concussion that he was dealing with towards the end of the season. Jake Allen plays 17 of the last 21 games for Montreal. Carey Price is so rested, and look what we're seeing. Look at the value of rest. I mean, he's a veteran goaltender, but look at the value of rest. So Carey Price is at another level. If Carey Price keeps going like this, then yeah, I mean, I give the edge to Tampa as the favorite, but I definitely see Montreal as having an ability to win this series. I don't want to pick them because I'm just joking. I don't believe in that sort of stuff anyways. So I'm going to go Montreal in seven.
Well, there you guys go. Both of you on Montreal in seven. I appreciate it. I'm the person who always pours cold water on everything. I just don't see. Yeah. I mean, I think Tampa Bay is just too good. I think it's going to go seven. I think Montreal's magic goes throughout the series, but I don't think that they're going to be able to keep it going. I think Tampa wins on home ice in game seven, but I think it's going to be a fantastic playoff series. And I'm looking forward to watching a lot of it as well.
Yeah, no, absolutely, Drew. And it is going to be a little bit weird, but maybe not as weird considering when the Stanley Cup was awarded last year. But the fact that the Stanley Cup's going to be awarded on like July 5th or July 7th or whatever it's going to be is going to be a little bit weird. But the thing is, Drew, if Tampa Bay wins the Cup, the great thing is that they were salary cap compliant. They did nothing wrong. You know, they were really the poster boys for just
now. You're getting me fired up.
Don't get Drew fired up at the end of the show.
Don't get me fired up at the end of the show.
They weren't 1 cent over the salary cap.
I do want to address one thing before we go today. What's coming out of Chicago with the Blackhawks organization is one of the worst things I've heard related to the game of hockey in a long, long time. And I'm not going to stand here and I'm not going to point fingers at who knows what, because I don't know. But if it's found out that people know what it's being claimed that they know, they should forfeit the right to ever be involved in the sport of hockey ever again, period. And I'm not a cancel culture guy. I'm not anything like that. But if you know of sexual assaults and sexual improprieties happening under your watch, happening where you can prevent it from happening, it has to stop. And if that means a whole lot of good hockey men, and definitely in quotes with that, because there's nothing good about covering up sexual assault allegations. If it means that you have to tear down an entire organization and multiple organizations, if it ends up, you know, if it ends up spider webbing out throughout the game of hockey, that's what you do. Because you have to remove the rot. And the rot is in multiple places. It's with the human being, and I use that word lightly, who does the act in the first place. And then it's even worse with the people who cover up for that human being and allow that person to then go and coach high school hockey and youth hockey, to put vulnerable kids in the eye close to a predator because you don't want to ruffle some feathers, because you don't want to, you know, you don't want to disavow the wall of silence that has been around hockey for way too long. You lose the right to be involved in hockey at that point in time. And I wanted to say that before we end today's show, just to get it there. We don't know where it's going to go. Time will tell. When it's relevant for us to cover it, we will. But I have to get that on the record before we wrap up. And I'm sorry that we have to wrap up a really fun show today with such a negative topic, but I do think it is going to be hanging over this upcoming Stanley Cup final.
And I have no problem with it. I think you're right. I think it's completely unacceptable. There's just no place for that in hockey, period. And I think I don't have to add anything else to what you said. And you know, maybe, you know, we might not be ending on the most positive note, but I think it did need to be said. So good for you for saying it.
Thank you. I appreciate that. Want to say a big thank you to our sponsors before we end for today. Rumors Restaurant and Comedy Club, Linden Market Dental Center, Bernstein's Deli, Zappia Group Realty, Boston Pizza, and our friends, of course, at Seagram's. I might go take a shot of Fireball right now. It is the weekend after all, and the patios have now opened as it's 7 minutes past 11 o'clock. Go out, support local businesses. They've reopened finally, a lot of them. Do what you can if you can afford it, and you can buy local and shop local and eat local and drink local. Go ahead and do it. It's going to be a beautiful day in Winnipeg. We've worked long and hard to get some of these restrictions lifted off. I hope you go and celebrate and enjoy it and do it responsibly and everything else along those
lines.
I'll
be at your backyard in about 15 minutes, Drew. It's going to take me that long to drive there. So, you know, have a couple drinks ready for me. Have some snacks, some Hawkins cheesies. Let's go.
As always, the security guards are alerted that you're not allowed on my property. Ezzy, Dave, you're welcome anytime. But you wanted to get that out there on the record, of course. Want to say a big thank you to Dennis Bayak and Craig Button for joining us on the program earlier today. They were great fun. Always great to talk to both of those guys. In case you missed any of the show, it's available immediately afterwards, right back on our YouTube channel. If you want the podcast version, that'll be up on the website and in your local podcast player very shortly this morning or early this afternoon. Big thanks to everybody for joining us in the chat room. It was great to see so many of you, so many regulars, so many new folks. We always appreciate it. If you haven't done it yet, subscribe to our YouTube channel, smash the like button on your way out. Always appreciate you guys doing that. For Dave Manuk in the top right, for Ezra Ginsberg in the bottom middle, I am your host, Drew Mandel. If it's Saturday, it's the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on our YouTube channel and all of our social media platforms.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.